You're tuned in to listen to Big Blue Kickoff live on Giants.com.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
This kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Kick behind the line and drop.
Bang.
The pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
It's a jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, live from the Combine in Indianapolis, day three and the final show from the Combine.
Are you sad?
John Schmelk, Anita Marks, I'm a little sad.
You're
we
right?
Had a lot of fun out here, absolutely.
It's been an exciting 3 days.
And you can see, he's working the phones.
All I'm really doing is just retweeting that you guys sent the tweet out that...
Oh, we appreciate
does.
That.
Yeah.
That's really sweet considering you've got like 15 times the followers that John and I have combined because you're such a stud.
Well, and they're all robots. And the stud to our left is Jason Lockon, for NFL Insider. Of course, does a fantastic job. And Jason, obviously, you've been listening around here and the combine. You got the guys in the field, but you also have a ton of stuff going on behind the scenes with general managers, with players, and things like that. A lot of franchise tags get applied during this time. What are you hearing? What's going on behind the scenes in terms of general managers preparing for the free agency period, which is now about 2 weeks away?
Yeah, and you're right. As much as we talk about the draft and you know, people think of the combine, the first thing they think of is the draft, this week is about a whole lot more than that, and there's a lot of business that needs to get conducted before teams are even thinking about setting their draft boards or addressing particular needs through the draft, you know, and focusing on particular prospects. So you're right. It's about figuring out the franchise tag, figuring out your budget, figuring out your salary cap situation, which guys do you still need to go to and say, hey, you got to take a haircut or we're going to have to go in a different direction. You know, all those uncomfortable things that go with the business of football, you're right, they're underway. I mean, if you're in any of these bars around here, you know, at any point in the afternoon or evening, you're going to see agents sitting at a table with general managers or cap guys or both, and that's not a coincidence. They're talking about players who are currently on their roster who they need to address and or free agents that agent represents.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've had this conversation on the show so far this week, and that is, to me, there's no greater week to be in one city, especially, I mean, you break news. You know, we cover. You break. Especially for guys like you and Adam Schefter and all these guys that break news. There's no better city to be in because you're around every owner,
right.
Every general manager, every head coach, coordinators, agents.
Yeah, everybody's here.
And it's just, it literally is a wealth of information.
Yeah. Well, and it's a small area. The downtown is not that big. There's only
no.
So many places you can really go to. I think more teams and agents have tried to just do business maybe in a suite at a hotel. And not maybe, you know, at a bar or restaurant where everybody can see it. I think some people make a little bit more of an effort to be covert than others. But really, this is the hot stove league. This is baseball's winter meetings.
Yep.
But they just don't call it that. They call it the combine, and people, you know, focus on, again, I think the average American, the average football fan, thinks of the combine, and it's all about the draft. It's not. It's really not all about the draft.
All right, so let's get ready for free agency. The Giants, obviously, are expected to be pretty big players. They have a lot of resources to spend. The question's going to be is who's going to be on the market to spend those resources on.
Right.
Who do you think is not going to get to free agency, whether a franchise tag or a long-term extension? I know the Broncos were apparently talking to Von Miller, trying to extend him. And obviously, who's not going to be there that maybe some fans think, oh, you know what, I would really love to get that guy on my team.
Yeah, I mean, if you have interest in Von Miller, he's going to be tagged. I don't think they're going to get a long-term deal done quickly. They'll get it done eventually, but he'll be tagged. Josh Norman's going to be tagged. Mo Wilkerson is going to be tagged, but I would just say he's in a little different situation because I could still see a trade being a possibility.
You know, you're the third or fourth person that's told us that this week.
Yeah, I mean, a trade would not shock me given the
second round.
If I'm them, I'm holding out for a first-round pick.
Really?
The guy just turned 26. I mean, if I'm the Jets and I'm marketing Muhammad Wilkerson, I'm saying, he's not even really in his prime. He could play three or four different positions. He's next to J.J. Watt, you know, the best in breed at what he does.
Yeah.
And let's say you know, it's going to cost you a lot of money to sign him, but if you sign him and he addresses a particular need for you, who in the first round of this draft over the next 3 years is going to outproduce him? Like, is there going to be a defensive lineman in this draft who – now, years 4 and 5, I get it. Now he's over 30 and that kid might, but – you've got, you know, at least you got 4 seasons before the guy turns 30. So which of these kids would you go and say, oh, yeah, he's definitely going to be better than Muhammad Wilkerson starting day one of 2016 and for the next four seasons?
And on top of that, who on the free agent market can you say, I'd rather spend money on this guy than
no, he's
spend
the
it
best,
on Wilkerson?
He'd be the best free agent available. Now, some might say Von Miller if Von's available, but, I talked to some personnel people who say no, because not that edge rushers are everywhere, but there's a decent number of elite edge rushers in the NFL. And you can kind of get them sometimes on the back end and still get production out of them. But there's just not a lot of Mo Wilkerson's walking around. I mean, he's J.J. Watt, light.
So, hypothetical throwing out your way now. Giants trade down from 10, and they get another second round. They trade down, they do something, they get like maybe another second round pick, another third round pick. And then they use that low-end one to trade for Mo.
Oh, I think, yeah. I mean, if that...
Is that...
If that were able
is that,
to...
Is that an A grade for Giants if that happens?
Yeah. I mean,
what would be the perception out there if that happens?
No, I mean, I don't know who could hate on that. I mean,
well, here's the trick, though. Can you wait that long to make the trade? Because at that point, you have to have a lot of cap space left and then afford to sign him if you wait till the draft. And you're taking a chance then.
Right.
Because you're counting on making that move on draft night when you don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, and the Jets as well, how long do they want to be carrying that $16 million cap figure? You know, they don't have their quarterback yet. They got to sign Fitzpatrick. Obviously, he's going to cost them money.
Snacks Harrison, who's also a
player. Yeah, I think he's
player.
Gone. I don't think they really have much of a fighting chance to keep him. I think he's going to do very well in free agency. But you're right. They would probably want to get that deal done in March and not the end of April. But, you know, things happen at the draft, so that wouldn't shock me. I mean, as to other guys who won't hit the market, I mean, I can't imagine the Dolphins let Olivier Vernon hit the market. I know they're sort of hemming and hawing
about. I'm hearing sign and trade with him as well.
That wouldn't shock me because he's a guy who they value, but I don't think they value him the way the market might. But they know we can't let him just get to the market and then lose him for a compensatory pick in 2017. So that wouldn't shock me, especially, again, given the dearth of pass rushers who are going to be available. I think a guy like Robert Ayers is going to do really well because who's he competing with?
Do they have to do something with Sue in order to fit Vernon?
No, I mean, Sue's got a high base salary. They could if Mike Tannenbaum wants to do what he did before, keep running that credit card bill up and pushing it out a year and pushing it, he could do it.
Right.
If I'm them and I'm looking at his performance in year one, I always looked at that as 3 years, $60 million. I don't want to now start guaranteeing the fourth year.
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean? Like, if this is what he was last year, now you can bring in a new regime and all that, and maybe he'll be better. But I don't want to start really realistically turning that into a 4- and 5-year deal when really it was $60 million guaranteed over the first three, and then it's pay as you go.
You mentioned Ayers. How about JPP? What do you think about him?
I mean, obviously, it's such an unusual situation. There's not a template for it. You're making projections. I just think it makes a whole lot of sense for him to come back here where they've already dealt with this. The locker room understands. I mean, I would imagine, I can't imagine what he goes through every day. And just looking at his hand and being uncomfortable about it. And it's just, you know, it's sort of like the elephant in the room where these guys, it's all, you know, I'm sure they're probably already making jokes about it. You know what I mean? They've gotten through the awkward part of it. Right. You know what
first,
I mean? That he's just one of the guys.
It was interesting. At first, when JPP first came back and he was in the locker room and he was walking around, he kind of, if you recall, he held his hand down here. He kind of hit it a little bit. But let me tell you something. After like the first 3 weeks,
nobody cared anymore.
You know, he talks a lot with his hands, and you know, he's sitting at his locker, and he's not hiding. I mean, it was kind of like, it is what it is, and everybody just, you know, and also I felt like JPP came in. It was a different attitude. You know, I mean, he was just. I mean, this is a guy who there were talks that maybe he wasn't going to be able to play again.
Right.
And here he is back in a Giants locker room playing. He just had it was just. And Jerry Reese spoke to the media yesterday, and he said, listen, that's a miracle story.
Yeah.
It is. And if you really look at it, it is a miracle story that he was able to play, and who knows how good. We don't know what his ceiling is going to be. We really don't know.
And I just think it makes a lot of sense for all. But look, they were able to work the contract out under duress last year. He is comfortable with everybody there. He knows his teammates. He knows the coaches. He's comfortable with the doctors. I mean, look, this obviously this book isn't written. There's still going to be different apparatuses. You know, there's going to be things that they – I just think for a lot of reasons. And there's a mental component to all this as well. Like, you know, this wasn't just a physical injury. I mean, this
of
is
course.
Something he's living with the rest of his life.
Well, we had Garofolo on yesterday, and Garofolo said that he's hearing that there's going to be some teams that are going to be throwing out some solid cash his way.
Well, I think you asked a great question, Anita. Is it more likely, Jason, that you're going to get a long-term contract, or is this going to be kind of like a one-year, let's see what he can do, and then maybe they'll readdress it next year?
Look,
what do you think?
they can dress these things up however they want. I mean, you could do a 5-year deal that's really a 1-year deal. It happens right. all the time. I mean, how much guaranteed money is there at the time of signing, and when does it expire? In other words, is it all paid out in year one, or you know, are there some roster bonus and things in year two and year three that are pretty much going to bind that player to your team because they're already guaranteed at the time of signing? I don't think he's going to be getting guaranteed money into year two and year three. I think it's going to be something of a prove it contract, and I don't know. It's going to be again. Obviously, we haven't seen anything like this quite before. I have a feeling when he tests the market, the end of the day, I personally just have a hunch I could see him staying with the Giants, but that's just a hunch for now.
Another thing Jerry Reese said to the media yesterday is, listen, the Giants know him better than anyone else.
That's what I'm saying, and he knows them, and with everything else that he's going through, I just think this would be – now, look, if someone's putting out their ridiculous money, it is what it is. But if this market is what I think it's going to be, I just think for a lot of reasons, football, just heart, mind, soul, body, the whole nine yards – I think the Giants are going to make a lot of sense for him. But maybe I'm misreading the market.
If you're a team like the Giants and you're heading into this free agent period with, you know, their top five in terms of resources available, how do you attack it? Do you target one or two top guys early and try to get that done in the first few hours? Can you have the luxury of trying to find somebody that maybe you don't have to overpay as much as you want? Well, how do you approach it?
I can tell you how they're approaching it. As soon as that sort of whatever we're calling it, the non-tampering period starts, you know, they already know there's going to be 20 to 30 players who they're comfortable with at a certain price point. Now, of that 20 to 30, there's probably 5 to 7 who are sort of like the top list guys, like their primary targets. But you know you can't get those guys. You can't just focus in on one individual at each position. Now, at a position like wide receiver, that list is probably a little longer than a position like pass rusher or tackle, just because there's not going to be many of them out there, you know, whereas, you know, there is going to be decent depth at the wide receiver position. And then, you know, you're playing the game. You're seeing who's offering what, and at which point, you know, does a Mohamed Sanu stop making sense and you go to plan B or plan C or whatever. You know, how much can you allocate for this potential Mo Wilkerson thing, or does it just start to look like a pipe dream to you and, you know, you've got to address your defensive line through other means?
In regards to the wide receiver position, Mohamed Sanu is a name that we talked about on the show, Travis Benjamin.
Marvin Jones, another.
It seems like there are a lot of, and again, I do this often, and I hate to because players hate it, but I do classify wide receivers as wide receivers. I look at Alshon Jeffrey as a one, but I don't think he's leaving Cleveland. I see a lot of twos out there. Which really,
twos
at the end of the day,
threes, yeah.
Giants have their number one,
and
Odell Beckham.
Yeah,
I know.
That's what they. Yeah, they don't need Batman. They just need Robin.
Exactly.
And there's a lot of Robins out there.
Besides Sanu, besides Travis Benjamin, two guys that we talk about, and Marvin Jones, as you said, some other guys low on the radar that kind of you like?
Yeah, I don't like this free agent class a whole lot to begin with. You know,
there's nothing sexy about it, right?
And a lot of guys are going to get overpaid just because the cap is going up, and there's teams like the Raiders and the Jacksonville Jaguars who aren't even at that 89% floor that everybody has to hit. Even if they have Confederate money and they can't give it away, if you stack enough of it up, somebody's going to take it. And that, you know, so that's going to sort of tilt the market on its axis a little bit at whichever positions they do that. And then how do those ripples sort of play out, and what does that mean for other players? I would not want to be a team that's wading in deep to this free agent class thinking they're going to solve a bunch of their issues. If you can pick one or two of if you get one or two of those top 5 or 7 guys, that's great. And maybe you make a minor trade, and then you need to obviously kick booty in the draft. But when you're talking about the high-end guys at these positions, and I'm like, then depth. You know, look, and maybe people explore restricted free agency more as well.
Damn.
Maybe that market gets a little more action, and you see teams saying, well, rather than do that, I'll try to sign this low-end guy to an offer sheet that maybe his team won't match.
Final question for me, the corner market. Not a lot of names out there. Sean Smith's the name that gets mentioned as one of the top guys. And the Giants obviously have Prince Mukamara. Does the market at corner with that low number of guys really help Prince in this free agent period?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, what does – we talked about Josh Norman. Obviously, he's not going to hit the market. But, you know, what does happen at the high end? You know, can a guy like Sean – when I talk to teams, I hear 7 maybe $8 million on Sean Smith.
Really, that's it, huh?
But
wow.
That's not what he's aiming for.
No, well,
like,
no, absolutely.
That's what I'm hearing from teams. And then when you talk to agents and how they value it, it's like, oh, well, that guy's got to get 10 because, you know, this guy got that and that guy got that. And, I mean, we'll kind of have to see. To me, the Rams are going to – what the Rams do will have major ramifications.
Because they have two guys.
Their whole secondary's up. Yeah. They've got two corners and two safeties. They want to keep one corner and one safety. Do they end up having to use the transition or franchise tag? Do they go out and give Janoris Jenkins the 15 he's trying to get per year? Or do they work something out with Trumaine Johnson, who a lot of teams, I think, prefer, especially if that price point is 11 or 12? What they end up doing between now and Tuesday, I think, will go a long ways to seeing what the what some of these actual numbers for corners should be.
My last question for you, offensive lineman out of the Ravens. His name escapes me.
Osemele.
There
yeah.
you go. Ozzie has put himself in a very non-Ozzie-like situation in regard to how he spent money the past few years. And, of course, Joe Flacco making the $20 million. What happens with him? Is that an offensive lineman you think the Giants might make a call
to? I think he's the best offensive lineman available. Yep. I think he's the best guard, and he might be a pretty darn good tackle as well. He's dabbled at right tackle and left tackle in a pinch, and he's been more than adequate. They made their bed when they signed Marshall Yanda to a high-end guard deal. I mean, they now
Yanda, Pitta, Joe.
Yeah, no, they've. I mean, Ray Rice was still on their books last year. Yep. I mean, they've had a lot of cap issues for a while there. And the way they've structured their contracts, I think some people would think is a little bit outdated. Yeah, I mean, look, you have to pay the piper at some point. You can't keep everybody. And again, given how limited this market is, I think Kelechi Osemele is going to do very well. And he may parlay this into getting tackle money at the guard spot, and the team might, then he might be there. Look, he probably is better than some of the right tackles in this league for sure already.
So if he ends up in New York, thumbs up.
Yeah, no, I think he's best of breed.
Okay.
Along the offensive line, I think he's gonna do very well though. I think he's gonna break the bank.
Jason, real fast, favorite veteran safety that's gonna be available in free agency.
I mean, I like Eric Weddle a ton, but he's gonna get north of $8 million, and he's over 30 years old. Like you better be a team that's real close, and he's the missing piece. You know what I mean? Like if it's a team like the Jags who do that. By the time they're really contending, if they ever do, he's done. But I think Eric Weddle still has a couple of really good years left in him. But you're gonna pay the price. You're gonna be paying for what he did in the past.
Jason, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for giving us the time. Jason Lock on Four, CBS NFL Insider. We'll be back with more Big Blue Kickoff Live when we return from the Combine in Indianapolis.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine, and the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine, Friday through Monday, only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke, Nita Marks with you, and now we're joined by our next guest, Tom Rock from Newsday. But before we get to Tom, I want to remind you that you should not forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. And Tom, of course, covers the Giants for Newsday.
Jerry Reese better be a DraftKing this year.
That's right.
Well, and
segue.
And Jerry Reese spoke to the media yesterday, and as always, Tom is on the front lines trying to get as much information
right in
out
row.
Of the Giants
Actually,
general manager
to get
as possible.
In. Who are all these like?
There was
who
a lot
are all
of
these
questions.
People we've never even seen before asking questions?
I did not expect a Mikhail Thompson question.
Yeah, how about that one?
But it came out, and you know what, though?
And your facial expressions, by the way, are priceless. Somebody needs to have a video on your facial expressions when somebody's asking questions. It's priceless.
I think generally I just kind of look around to see if anybody else recognizes the absurdity of what's happening.
What was your biggest takeaway from Jerry yesterday?
Well, I think he was honest about what he needs, and that's a little bit of everything. He said they need good players, and that's not what they have right now, and that's not what they've had for the last few years, and that's why they're in the straits that they are right now. It sounds a little bit like a speaking point, like he's being glib when he says we need good players and we need them all over the roster.
But it's true.
But right now it's true. You know, in the past we've kind of rolled our eyes when he said we need to take the best player available and not worry about need. I think when you look at this draft, that's exactly what they need is whoever the best player available is, they'll take him because he will be a need. Unless he's a starting quarterback, which is really the only position where you can't really see an upgrade right now, whoever they pick at 10, I think, is going to come in and be an immediate improvement.
Well, I think it's interesting because we've had a lot of scouts on, and a number of them feel that Ezekiel Elliott will be there at 10, and at that point in time, they feel that Elliott will be the best player on the board. So,
pretty interesting.
Right. So is it true to form? Do they take the best player on the board if Elliott is still there?
Right.
You know, I don't, you know, that's going to be intriguing.
You got to see how many of the questions you've answered in free agency at that point.
That's a great point.
Because at that point, you're going to know if you have the pass rusher that you need. You're going to know if you have the offensive lineman that you need. You're going to know if you have
safety.
The veteran safety, right? You're going to know if Prince is back or not, and you're going to know if you have to replace him or not.
What
linebackers did
you bring in? I mean, there's a million questions.
There's so many questions. Now, it's very intriguing to think about an offense with Odell making one-handed catches down the field and Ezekiel Elliott jumping over people with the ball in his hands, and all of a sudden now you could have potentially two of the top five or six playmakers in the league in one offense. I mean, yeah, that would be a pretty dynamic combination, I would think, and they would probably help each other. But I don't think at that point, if they go running back, they're going to have had a really good free agency period at that point to justify that pick. Now, you look at what they've done in the past, you know, they were gaga over David Wilson's speed, and Ezekiel Elliott seems to be sort of in the same ballpark in terms of speed-wise. We're going to see. He's going to run his 40 a little bit later today. But he seems to also be a much more well-rounded back, the kind of guy you can plug right in.
Pass protection, catch it, blitz, everything.
Blitz pickup, all those things that David Wilson never really had time to click with.
Yeah, I forgot who was on with us yesterday. He was saying that it's been a long time since a back of his caliber has stepped up and with this type of pass protection skills, because you just don't see it in a lot of the young running backs coming out these days that really pride themselves on blocking and pass protection, and so that's really lifted his value in this draft.
He was talking a little bit yesterday about how when he started playing football, he actually started as a fullback. And eventually became a tailback. But
and by the way, the funny thing about that, then they asked him, when did you play fullback?
Yeah,
he said, when
old.
I was 7 years old at Pop Warner. So. That's what he said.
It still counts.
It's funny, though.
But he also said that when he got to Ohio State, he recognized right away that if he was going to play with those grown-ups, basically, and he was a 17-year-old kid, he had to figure out how to block and how to use the scheme to his advantage, and he did that.
Just a quick note here, because you talked about the running backs going today. So I know a lot of people, if you're like me, I'm tuned into the NFL Network because it's nonstop coverage. Offensive linemen and running backs today, quarterbacks, wide receivers, and tight ends tomorrow, defensive linemen and linebackers on Saturday, and then DBs on Monday, if you're tuning in and you want to see all the fun. So
you have a better view than we do because
we don't have no view.
I'm not allowed in the arena. People always ask about that.
Well, are you putting your name in the pot for the quarterbacks for tomorrow?
No, I'm going home.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Not until Eli retires. Then I'll go in and watch the quarterbacks.
And the bigger problem is that the TVs that have in the media room, they don't have volume on them. So all you're seeing, you're not hearing, you know, Mayock break down all these guys. All you're seeing is, you know, guys running and times pop up. So
what are we doing here, John?
It's not. Well, we talked to a lot of people the last couple of days that work for a lot of NFL teams. That's what we're doing here. And a lot of the talk, Tom, is about free agency. And obviously the Giants, have, as you talked about, have a lot of work to do. And is this unique for you seeing the Giants in this situation where they have so many resources and we talked about all the needs? Have you seen them in this situation before heading into free agency?
No, I don't think anybody has. This is a pretty unique scenario here with what could be close to $60 million to spend in free agency. Unfortunately for them, just about every other team in the league also has that windfall and that kind of bankroll right now, and it's just a matter of degrees, and they're all protecting their players that they drafted who would normally be coming out on the market right now. So you get to see players like Von Miller, players like Alshon Jeffrey, players like Josh Norman, who would normally be coming out on the market. Teams would be more hesitant to use the franchise tag now to put $14 million towards the salary cap on a one-year guaranteed deal for franchise players is no big deal because everybody's got that kind of space. So it's sort of a catch-22 for the Giants that they're going to be spending all that money on the second-rung players from teams. The players that teams are willing to let go as opposed to the ones that they would like to keep. And so that comes back to the draft history of the Giants, because all of these teams have those players who are getting their second contracts with the teams, and the Giants really aren't in that position right now to have second contract guys.
I'd like to go back to Jerry Reese's press conference yesterday.
Yeah, sure.
And I thought he spent a lot of time talking about what's going on with the safety position and reminding a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Bennett Jackson, Nat Burhe, Mikael Thompson, that these are guys that they were expecting, some performance and contribution to the team, and they all went down.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we're talking about Landon Collins, we're talking about who can they go out and get. It sounded to me in the way that, and Jerry was pretty passionate when he was talking about them, that he's expecting big things from them this year, and them to come in and really compete and see what they can do and actually have some depth at that safety position.
You know, one of the things that you could also point to in that is one of the guys that they kept was Dave Merritt, and he's the safeties coach. And so I think they recognize the kind of the situation that they put that position in terms of the injuries and all of those things. You know, I always found it a little troubling that the problems that we talked about in the preseason with the Giants and last offseason with the Giants wound up being the same problems that they had at the end of the season. And it was almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, it almost seemed like. So safety was one of them. Everybody was saying they need to get help with safety. They need to get help with safety. And eventually they brought in Merriweather and Dahl, and, you know, they did what they did and won't be back. But, safety was still an issue. So those young guys, while they were counted on to perform, I don't know what level they were counted on to perform at, and I don't know what level they're going to be able to perform at, because we haven't seen any of them really play a significant time. So it's going to be interesting to roll the dice on those three young guys, hoping that one of them steps forward.
We will try to squeeze in a couple calls with Tom Rock, so get on the line if you want to ask a couple questions about the Giants and free agency in the offseason, 201-939-4513. We will try to get you in before Tom departs in about 10 minutes. So, Tom, heading into now this free agency period, obviously you figure the focus is going to be on the defense. Is this going to be a situation where you think we're going to hear about the Giants getting a couple of big names in that first 24-hour period? Or is this going to be your typical, Giants be patient, let things play out, and kind of do what they normally do?
No, I think there's an urgency. I think they definitely need to jump into this pool right away. They've been doing their research. They're going to know who's on the market and who's not by the time the bell rings on March 9th or whatever it is, in about 2 weeks. So they'll be ready and poised. I think they'll be in a position where they'll have some signatures right away, or at least some visits right away lined up. The Giants usually bring them in and do their physicals and all those things before the ink is actually applied to the paper. But yeah, I think defense is definitely the way to go with the free agency. You're going to need. You need pass rushers. We were just inside doing the math with Paul Schwartz and Art Stapleton. We were counting the number of sacks on players who will currently be on the roster as of the new league year, and there were three. It was Jonathan Casillas had two, and the fullback had one. And that, those are the only sacks that are coming back to this team guaranteed right now.
From last season.
From last season. Now, wow. Now some of them are free agents, and you expect them back. You know,
and Hankins, too, who was hurt, obviously.
Right, Hankins was hurt. But they were only three sacks coming back to this team. And that's a pretty scary number when you think about what this team has always built itself on. And when you look at how the Super Bowl was won, more importantly, and how the antidote for these big premier quarterbacks seems to be just knocking them on their butts.
Interesting. You know, just to make a quick note, I look around all the NFL cities and all the beat reporters. You guys seem to be pretty tight. Do you feel that? Do you feel like you and Schwartz and Art and even Ohm and, you know, I mean, I just...
It's an act.
No, it's not.
Yeah, we hate each other.
I think it's cool. You guys are always together. You're breaking bread together. You're traveling together. You're hanging out.
It is very different.
What I'm saying is you don't see that with a lot of beat reporters in other cities as close knit as you guys are.
It's very competitive. It's almost like, you know, when we talk to running backs sort of in training camp, and they talk about how they're a close bunch, but they're really competing against each other. I guess that's a little bit of the way it is with us.
It's cool.
You know, we don't talk business very much. We don't talk, you know, there's no bragging, I guess, about scoops. And, you know, sometimes some of us have better days than others, and there's days when you get beat. Actually, now in the business, there's hours where you get beat because everything's
on Twitter, right?
And you can come back right away and have a win. So, you know, I don't think anybody keeps score. At least I don't. Maybe somebody else does. And
the editors, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, but yeah, no, it is a good group. You know, we get along well. We have a lot of fun. I'm sure, you know, we were just in the press room laughing a little bit about one of the prospects sounded like Crush from Finding Nemo.
Were you listening to Joey Bosa?
Yes.
Very laid back individual.
Hat to the back, like it's true Italian.
Totally.
It's me. And, this is who I am.
I think some people were raising their eyebrows at how much noise we were making there, but you know, we're the New York
that's
media.
That's that New York bunch.
New York
those
media,
are those Giants
the New
guys. You mentioned Twitter. What's some of the fans out there who are tweeting? What's the information they want from you? What's give us some tweets that they're like, they need to be in the know with what?
Well, everybody wants to know who's coming back and who's not on the Giants, and
you have all the answers,
of course. Of course, I know everything. I'm just not tweeting it or telling anybody right now. You know, my sense is that you know, the people you think will be back will be back, and the people you think won't be back won't be back. You know, so you know, I think Randall is sort of on, you know, probably on his way out. Somebody else will give him a deal. Prince Amukamara and Ayers, I think the Giants will probably put an offer on the table for them before free agency starts. They'll go out and test the market and most likely get a better deal from somewhere else. And or if they don't, they'll come back. Same with guys like Brinkley, you know, maybe Marcus Kuhn in that same realm. You know, so I think there's a lot of interest from fans over who's going to be on this team next year, who's coming back next year. And right now, you know, we don't know the answers. A lot of that depends on what other teams do and how they value these players, especially guys like Ayers and Prince, who are so hard to put a value on because when they're on the field, they're very productive, but they're not on the field enough, and so it becomes sort of a little bit tricky to try and gauge how much you want to invest in those guys.
It's interesting. Before we arrived here, I did not think that Prince and JPP and Ayers would be back.
I didn't think JPP would be back?
I did not. But since we've been here and the conversations we've had and the people we've had on the show, I'm sensing something different. I am, because the Giants have a nice chunk of change to play with. Mm-hmm. Well. And I think you know, because, and you're another person who's been on who said, you know, unfortunately, like, the talent pool out there is not the best. This mm-hmm. is, you know, it's unfortunate. This is not the best year to have a ton of money, because there's not a lot of grade A talent out there that you're going to be able to throw money at.
But Joey now.
Yeah. But, you know, but you're in, and the Giants are going to want to spend that money. And why would you know like when you're well, when you look around when you look around the landscape, why would you lose errors? Why not give
right.
JPP? I mean, I just
well, JPP is a little bit different because you have to project him a little bit differently. But you look at a guy like Prince, you can't if you just let him walk away, you need to replace him.
Well, yeah.
You know, you can't say, well, Prince is done. We're not going to pay him top cornerback money. And then, but you have to find somebody else to play top cornerback position.
But in being here, what's being communicated to us is that there's not a lot of teams that are knocking on Prince's door for top cornerback money.
Right. Right.
That's what we've been hearing for the past few days.
So he may wind up coming back.
That's what I'm saying. So mm-hmm. It's coming in here, I thought the Giants would lose a number of guys that are on that roster into free agency, but now I don't know. I'm not so sure right now.
Well, we'll find out next week.
No question. Anita mentioned Twitter. I got a couple of Twitter questions for you, Tom.
Oh, good.
How important do you think it is, and where should the Giants prioritize getting a number two wide receiver to play opposite Odell Beckham Jr.? That from A.J. Marshall.
You know, I thought it was interesting when we talked to I guess it was Ben, right, who we asked him about wide receivers.
Yep.
And the only name he mentioned was Victor Cruz. And it seems a little foolhardy to kind of put all your eggs in that basket right now. You would think the Giants have learned that lesson from last year. Now, certainly they do need other players. They have a couple of good guys on the roster who can play like the three and the four and maybe line up in the slot a little bit. But I think you do need that number two guy. Maybe Victor can come back and do it. I don't know. It would certainly be a heck of a story if he could. But they definitely need a true wide receiver to be opposite Odell Beckham Jr., I think, just to take some of the defensive pressure off of him.
Another question I've seen on Twitter the last couple of days, Tom. The offensive line, obviously they moved on from Jeff Schwartz and Will Beatty. Mm-hmm. Is that a move they make that's going to be a significant one where they've already used a lot of high draft picks on offensive linemen? Are they going to go out there and spend a significant amount of money to try to bring in a big-time offensive lineman to play on the right side? Are they going to try to, use their priorities on defense and then figure it out? How do you think they're going to approach that offensive line
spot?
Well,
they got rid of one Schwartz. They may be bringing in another because his brother Mitchell Schwartz.
Oh, I thought you meant Paul.
Oh,
no?
Yeah, well, they've been trying to get rid of him for years. I think he's got a lifetime deal.
Yeah, he might.
Once a Giant beat writer, always a Giant beat writer. So, Mitchell Schwartz is certainly a name, and he would come in and be a starting right tackle. You know, I think you got to look at that right side. I think they're pretty good. Center, left guard, left tackle, and then you look at the blueprint sort of that the Cowboys put forward in building their offensive line the way they did, and it was all draft picks. And the Giants in the last 3 years have spent either a first or second round pick on that offensive line. Maybe they need another one, and then you have a sort of a core four group going forward, and they can blossom together and build together and grow together.
Another Twitter question. Do you think the Giants is from at Al Prep Music, Alex Levine. Do you
What's
think
up,
the
Al?
Giants are going to start reprioritizing the linebacker position this offseason, either in free agency or the draft?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they ever have put a priority on that position, and it's sort of the tight end of the defense. You know, those are the two positions where they always seem to just figure that they'll make do with what they have. They've dabbled in some free agency. They've brought in some players: Antonio Pierce, Michael Boley. But last year they brought in Casillas and JT Thomas.
Yep.
But those guys, I think Casillas was more of a special team signing and wound up playing linebacker. I certainly don't see them drafting in the first round a linebacker, even if Miles Jack winds up being there for them at 10, which would be an interesting conundrum. There's just no history of doing that at all.
And now the final question, and I saved this for last because I know how much you love the combine and watching guys work out on the field.
It's my favorite time of year.
Explain why.
It's really not, because I'm being ironic, because it is very productive in terms of getting information from team personnel, from agents, and it's always nice to see the other writers, and you sort of trade notes on what's going on, and you meet with the coaches, and you run into people in the hallway all the time, and you're able to get that information. In terms of the players, I found over the years that even the media sessions become less and less useful. Because
you get nothing out of them, huh?
They're totally coached. It's kind of like you know now kids in school are they're taught to take the test instead of taught the material.
Okay, that's
so
interesting.
So now these guys come in and they're taught how to talk to the media and how to do their 15-minute interviews with the teams. Ben McAdoo even said the other day, you know, anybody can act like a civilized person for 15 minutes. It's, you know, there's no way to judge
except for giant beat writers, obviously.
Well. That goes without saying.
Tom, we appreciate the time,
Mike.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much. Tom Mock from Newsday. Plenty more coming up on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com, live from Indianapolis at the Combine. We'll be back right after this. Thanks, Tommy.
Okay.
Is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. John Schmelk and Nita Marks. And our next guest is Jenny Ventress.
Yay!
She writes for the Monday Morning Quarterback. Of course, Peter King's excellent site via Sports Illustrated. And Jenny's done a lot of cool stuff here with the Combine and some of these rookies over the last couple of years. She's done an excellent, excellent job. So we want to try to go in depth with her today on what she's been up to. And Anita, let me know that you had a really cool opportunity to kind of step in during one of these interview processes and kind of see what's going on with some of these players.
Yeah, no, it was pretty neat. I wanted to sort of get in the room and see one of these. Every team has 60 formal interviews that they can do with players, and each of the interviews is 15 minutes. So the teams have suites at the Crown Plaza Hotel and, you know, bring prospects in every night between 6 and 11 p.m. Sorry about that. A couple of technical issues.
Also, radio engineer Anita Marks. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. So, but every night between 6 and 11 p.m., teams interview these guys in this formal interview room. So it's, you know, usually the GM, the head coach, position coach, coordinator, whoever the prospects are they're bringing in. So got to sit down in one of the interviews last night with a quarterback interviewing with the team, and it was 15 minutes. It was so... It goes by so quickly. I mean, that's the thing that really jumped out to me is that you think that teams get so much out of meeting the guys, and a lot of times they can, but it's 15 minutes is jam-packed with they're going over film, they're asking them about their background, and there's an air horn that sounds at the end, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, we're over, you know, like the time's up, and you have to get what you get in that short amount of time. It's kind of crazy.
But really cool in regard to like what they put the player through. Yeah. I'm sure, I mean, we've talked about it this week. I'm sure it's got to be very nerve wracking for any player to sit there and not sure what's going to be asked. Apparently like a few of the questions that I've heard this week is one team out there, we're not sure what team it is asking, are you attracted to your mother? What is that? Another question out there is...
That's a weird one.
Okay, right? Another one out there is... I mean, just to give you an idea of, like, what these guys are going through. And keep in mind, these guys are, like, what, 20, 21 years old? Yeah. Another question out there is, if you were to murder somebody, would you use a
gun?
Use a gun or a knife? What? I mean, it's just, it's to me, it's like, it's insane questions.
It is. And, you know, I think the guys are really well coached. So I think what teams are trying to do is to put them in situations with these strange off-the-wall questions that they can't be coached for. So, you know, the player I sat in with last night, the first question was, tell us about your family. He spent 3 minutes or so talking about his family. So that's one-fifth of the interview,
yeah.
Right?
And
so...
And he was coached to do that.
Exactly.
Because what is it called again? It's called...
Filibustering.
There
right?
you go.
So,
filibustering.
You know, you spend the time talking about a safe topic and then maybe you avoid... But, you know, it's your mother hot question. I mean, that one strikes me. Not only is it... really a strange question.
That is very Sigmund Freudish going on right
yeah,
there, right?
Exactly. But the other thing is, like, in this era of,
you know, NFL teams being more aware about how we treat women and being respectful of, you know, all the domestic violence and sexual assault. Yeah. Not that that is related, but it's the objectification of your own mother. I think that's not a line of questioning they should be going down. It's sort of strange to
me. And how are you going to respond to that? No, my mom's not hot. I mean, guys.
Yeah, I think pretty much that's exactly how you respond, to be quite honest with you.
I'd probably say she was hot in college. I said, like, you know, yeah, my dad told me how hot she was in college, but yeah, now she, I don't know, you know, she's, you know, she's put on a little weight. And I don't know. I mean, what do you, how do you respond to that? I don't know.
In the interview you were in, Jenny, was it mostly off the field stuff, or did they do a lot of football stuff? I know some teams like to put like plays up, bring video in, analyze a play. How did they kind of split their time?
It was half and half. So the first 7 or 8 minutes or so were questions about, you know, the player's background. Is there anything you need to tell us? That's a popular question that teams ask players. Now, this guy was very clean cut. He had no off-the-field issues. But that gives players a chance to bring up something like if they've had a positive drug test in college or if they got suspended for the game. You know, the scouts and the have done all this legwork in the fall, so the teams know most of the answers. But especially when they're interviewing juniors who are coming out to the draft, this is their first chance to sort of hear directly from them. So, yeah, the first half of the interview was background questions, and then the second half they put plays up on the video screen. And so the quarterback's coach had picked a series of plays. A lot of times they pick the first play. In this case, was they call it a sugar play, some play that's like he's done well on. It gets him talking. He feels comfortable. And then maybe, in this case, they didn't hit him with, like, an interception that he had thrown or anything. But it was four throws in a row. But they only got through four, and then the air horn sounded and time was up. But it was really intense. You know, they put the play on the screen. And this guy, we could tell, was a very smart quarterback, as many quarterbacks are, obviously. But he knew right away, like, what the play was, what the outcome was. And they were asking him things that will affect how he would perform in the NFL. So what is the communication with the sideline like? What's your call in the huddle? What's the protections? If your receiver falls down on the sail route, you know, where would you go with the football instead? So
wow.
It was very detailed stuff.
Now, what was really interesting is that we had a chance to run into Mark Dominic, who was on the show yesterday. And Jerry and Jenny shared the story with him. And he said that he used to do that when he was with the Bucks, but what he would do is that he would put up, for example, he would put up a play where, like, the kid is like, in the red zone, and then he'd say, how did you get there? Because what they wanted to do is they wanted to test his memory in regard to that series and see how much he can recall in regard to that series, what plays were called, and how he even got into the red zone. So, I mean, it's fascinating to me. It really is.
It's trying to get the most you can out of this situation. So you only have 15 minutes. So what is the way that you can get the best sense of what his football aptitude and IQ is? I mean, to me, the fact that a quarterback can recall, he can see a play instantly that happened 3-4 months ago, you know, and know exactly what the outcome was and what all the calls were, what he was seeing on the play. And he was saying, I was expecting quarters coverage, but we got a different coverage, and so I had to adjust. I mean, to me, that was impressive. So I said to the head coach on the way out, how does he able to do that? And he said, the issue is if they're not able to do that, right? And he said, that's the base standard. And it just sort of goes to show how hard it is to play the position of quarterback. We sit here at the Combine every year. Why is it so hard to pick the next great quarterback? Why is it so hard to find 32 quarterbacks to start in the NFL? And then you start to see this guy who may or may not ever be an NFL starter, and the amount of, you know, mental capacity that it takes to play that position at the college level, and then the NFL is a whole other jump, you know?
Interesting. I want to go back for a second. You did a great series a couple years ago with Andre Williams.
Yes,
for Monday Morning Quarterback. And obviously still a member of the Giants. I know Giant fans are a little disappointed in the year he had in year number two. Do you keep up with Andre? Do you stay in touch with him? And kind of how's he trying to bounce back to become a more of a fixture running back with the Giants?
Yeah, and I mean, I think last year was a tough year for the running backs overall. With the rotation, it seemed like it was hard for any of them to get into a rhythm. So I'm interested to see how they'll handle that moving forward. But, you know, I do keep up with Andre. I think the thing with him that's pretty impressive is he's always, like, trying to figure out ways to get better. And I remember when he was coming out in the draft, the big knock on him was his hands. And here at the Combine, he performed well, but he dropped a couple passes in the position drills. And so he saw a sports psychologist. He was doing juggling. And he was having sessions of, you know, mentally, how do you, you know, focus on the ball and focus on the catch? So that was just one example of something. And, you know, I think that's an ongoing work in progress for him. You know, catching the ball doesn't come easily naturally to all running backs. But that's one example of how diligent he is. I just think he's an old soul, and I think he understands what it means to be a professional athlete. He fits into the Giants culture really well. And so I think he's someone who can be productive moving forward. I just think, you know, you have to figure out the right situations. You know, they tried to use him in the goal line sometimes. He wasn't always satisfied. And I know from talking to him a couple of times last year, you know, I remember there was one tough loss and he'd gotten the ball on the goal line. It was the Jets game, right? And he didn't get it in and he was really frustrated with himself because he says in the future they won't give you that opportunity if you're not making the most of it. So I think he's got a great head on his shoulder and I think he's working really hard. He and his wife just had a baby boy as well.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. It was really cute. He tweeted him out. So, and again, another thing we've been talking about since we've been here is just the wealth of knowledge that's out there. And I know you've been out there, you've been meeting with a lot of coaches and whatnot. Give us some nuggets. What are some of the things that you've learned already, whether it's free agency or guys in the draft? What are some of the nuggets that you're walking away with that you weren't anticipating?
Well, I think the one interesting thing this year is, you know, with the cap numbers going up, some teams getting unexpected cap space, teams can spend a lot more, and the franchise tags aren't as prohibitive as they might have been in the past. But the question is, do you want to spend that much money? Like, cash-wise, is that smart? So even though you have all this cap space, how much of it are you going to spend? The cap is higher than it's ever been, and there's sort of a resetting of value. So, you know, if there's a left, like, for instance, you know, Bill's left tackle, Cordy Glenn, is going to be a free agent. Maybe he's not worth $11 million per year, but maybe they're, with the way teams have cap space this year, with the lack of other players in the position on the market, maybe he commands $11 million per year. So I think we're going to see that at a lot of positions. A lot of marquee players are going to be tagged. They're going to be off the market. Von Miller, you know, Josh Norman, maybe Alshon Jeffrey, players like that, because teams can tag them to make sure that they have them if they don't strike long-term deals. And then it's, you know, how much do you want to spend? Like, if you have the space to spend, is it wise to invest all this money in a player that you're not sure is at that elite tier, but that's what the market's calling for and you have the space to spend it, do you still do it? So I think that's been an ongoing storyline. The other thing is, you know, I guess it's every year, but all the musical chairs at quarterback, you know, now Colin Kaepernick wanting out, you know, will Brock Osweiler stay in Denver? There's just a lot of moving pieces, I feel like, around the league, maybe more so than other years at the quarterback's position.
And usually you don't expect the Giants to be one of those teams that are going to be heavily involved in free agency, but right now they're right at the top of that cap, you know, room list.
Yeah.
What's your overall feel from what you've been hearing about what people think the Giants might be up to when free agency starts in a couple weeks?
Just think talent on the defensive side of the ball. And, I mean, I think that was abundantly clear when John Mara, you know, with his end-of-the-season remarks, just that there's not championship caliber talent on the defense, and pass rusher, which has been the Giants' hallmark for so long, is such a huge need. They've got to spend a lot of money at that position. The linebacker, safety, I think. So you're looking at defensive end, linebacker, safety. I think those have got to be the top three targets in free agency with pass rusher number one.
No, I know that, you know, obviously under the Monday Morning Quarterback, you cover the NFL as a whole, but in reading a lot of your articles and what you covered the Buffalo Bills a lot more this season. I know Mario Williams is a guy that gets talked about with a lot of Giants fans. What can you kind of shed some light in regard to what do you think the Bills do? How do you think that situation pans out? And do you think he'd be a good fit for this Giants team?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Mario will be playing in Buffalo next year. I mean, I think that's just a matter of time before he's released. So, you know, I'm not sure. Last season was disappointing. And I covered Rex Ryan in New York. I know how his defense works. And I think, you know, there was a lack of buy-in from a lot of the players.
Wow.
And that was my sense of the system. I mean, I've seen that system. You know, you watched, you know, the Broncos stymie the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, and their game plan is very similar to the one that Rex Ryan has always used against the Patriots. If you watched it, I mean, they kind of flooded a bunch of defensive backs in the middle of the field, obviously pressuring Brady up the middle in his face. So, you know, I know that defense works, that system works. So to see Williams be so disgruntled, to me that's a little bit of a red flag, because if you're bringing in a guy on your team, you're going to have to pay him a lot of money. You want to make sure that he's a good locker room presence too, and it didn't seem like that was the case in Buffalo last year. So I think any team looking to bring him in, I think he still has talent, I think he can be a good fit for a team, but it's got to be a place where, you know, he's excited to be and he's going to buy in. And I don't know what those factors are. I don't know him personally, but you know, I think any team that's considering bringing him in has to kind of consider what happened last year in Buffalo.
Final question for me. What are you working on with Monday Morning Quarterback right now? Give us a preview of what we might be seeing from you or maybe on the site in general. I saw Peter. He walked in before. He's working on stuff.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little sneak preview of what fans might be able to see on Monday Morning Quarterback coming up soon?
Well, we mentioned sitting in on the interview, so I'll have the story on that on our site next week. So, you know, what the formal interview process is like. We talked about it a little bit more here, but we'll have that on the site next week. And, right now trying to set up some projects to work on for the upcoming season. I think there's a lot of storylines in the NFL, and so it's a great opportunity with all the teams here to try to figure out, you know, can you follow a team through a season maybe, or, you know, is there an interesting player in the free agency process? So trying to figure that out.
I think what's going to be an interesting storyline, and I think you'll definitely hit on it at some point in time this season, is the analytics now. You know, and granted, yes, have analytics been a part of the process? It has, but has it been so prevalent, like in your face, like in regard to like it being talked about publicly? I don't think so. So this is like a whole new element in regard to equating analytics, combining it with football analysis and football scouting to make sure you're putting the best team together. I think it's going to be really intriguing.
Yeah, and obviously with the Browns, like there's been that's been front and center. Are they going to do things differently? But there's a lot of teams across the league trying to figure out how much you incorporate analytics, what weight you put on it. I think there's some resistance from old school coaches who have done it a certain way a long time and never have had it. Then you hear from a lot of coaches who say it's not the end-all, be-all, but it's another piece of information. I think that's where most teams fall, that they say, we're willing to incorporate the analytics side. It's not the final say. It's just another piece of information that can help us make decisions and can help us game plan, things like that.
Jenny, great stuff.
As always.
Thanks for having me.
We love reading your stuff on Monday Morning Quarterback. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Jenny Ventress, plenty more Big Blue Kickoff Live coming your way from the Combine in Indianapolis when we return.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. We'll have Matt Miller from Bleacher Report in a few minutes. But in the meantime, if you want to jump in and call in and ask a question or two about the Combine or the NFL, feel free. John Schmelk, Anita Marks with you. And we'll take your calls for the next couple minutes until Matt joins us just past the top of the hour. And, you know, I think we've gotten some good information. We've had, some, you know, three very good reporters on so far. And what's your overall take so far from what you've seen here the last couple of days?
Oh, wow, that's a loaded question.
Oh, sure it is. I'll make it easy on you.
Well, I feel like we've been spending more time talking about free agency. Obviously, that needs to happen before the draft. But
well, another part, too, is that we haven't workouts yet, so there's not much to talk about what's going on the field here with the rookies either, at least not yet.
It's true. But we talked about it yesterday. Like just and I'm excited to have Matt on because Matt is just – I worked with him at Bleacher Report.
Oh, he's wonderful.
2 years ago, and he's just he's such a great evaluator of talent. But we talked about it. Miles Jack, to me, is there's so much buzz around here about him. I had a chance to talk to Stefania Bell this morning. I had breakfast with her at the hotel, and she had a chance to like watch him kind of work out and do some stuff. And she said his knee injury was just a meniscus tear, which obviously is not as serious as an ACL or MCL. But everyone I'm talking to is thinking that he's going to go top three, top five.
Yeah, the thought seems to be that he'll be well enough to do some type of pro day workout in about a month and a half right before the draft. So, like you said, you know, the rehab going well, and the teams will like to see him in person, but they've seen so many you know, games on tape from him. They just love what they see. Jalen Smith, a different story, obviously, coming back from the ACL. He posted a video on his Twitter page yesterday of him walking without a brace for the first time, so he was excited to share that. But obviously, still a bit of a ways off when it comes to the rehab process with him. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these teams evaluate these players that do have some question marks in terms of injuries, and I think we're going to get a great idea of how they're going to do that right now as Matt Miller from Bleacher Report makes his way over to our table. And, Anita, you know, we've talked to Matt many times here on the show, and he does a great job evaluating, you know, a lot of players.
We used to work together. Not this past year, but the year before.
And here he is. We welcome him, Matt Miller from Bleacher Report.
How's it going?
Doing well, Matt. How are you?
So I used to come into the Bleacher Report offices, and it would be all these guys watching, and Chris Sims as well, mm-hmm. and they'd be sitting around and watching the football games, and I just would walk in there with like my piece of paper and my pen, and I would just, they were just a wealth of information. You know, you watch the games a certain way. I feel that I'm pretty knowledgeable, but you guys take it to a whole new level. And so I felt so blessed that I was able to like watch those 4 o'clock games with you guys, and I learned so much.
Yeah, no, that's a great atmosphere because you get people who that's all they do is like watch football for a living, mm-hmm. and they sit in a room together, and you're not always going to agree, you know, with what each other's saying, but you can definitely learn a lot. And
that's the fun part, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because you know, Chris played in the NFL for a couple years longer than I did, you know, so I could definitely pick up some nuggets from him. That makes it fun.
Absolutely, and of course, Matt does all the draft analysis with Bleacher Report. You know, you have to put those mock drafts on, even the ridiculous early ones like this one. We really don't know anything yet.
Right.
Let's start the combine first. Obviously, some guys I know disappointing they're not going to run, and I'll start there. A wide receiver that I've heard people say they love him. I've heard people say they don't like him. He might not even be the top wide receiver on their board, and that's Laquon Treadwell. And some of the big questions about him, his ability to separate, his speed.
Right.
Now he's not going to run the 40. That's got to raise an awful lot of red flags for scouts here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it raises some red flags, but I'll tell you what, it echoes what you see on game film. He's not fast. That's just not who he is. You know, he's probably a high 4.5, you know, mid 4.6 type of runner. That's okay. It's not his game. So I understand him not wanting to run here because you don't want to disappoint. What I would say, if he asked my opinion, now you only have one chance at your pro day. And if you have a bad 40 time there, yeah, so it puts a lot of pressure on you to perform in that one instance. So that's where they get into trouble. But he is a polarizing player because he came off that awful leg injury, so you have to worry about the medicals. He fired his agent and his financial advisor and his trainer just a couple weeks ago, so you worry about what's his mindset like there. And now he's opting not to run here. So there are a couple things that teams have to get comfortable with him, but if they do, he could be a top 10 pick.
So a lot of people equate him to like a Dez Bryant. What were Dez Bryant's results here at the combine? I mean, is that, are they anticipating that? Also curious, Kelvin Benjamin. Granted, I know he didn't play last year because of his knee injury, but Kelvin Benjamin, I mean, obviously he was a four. So just because he doesn't have that speed, if he's got that body and that presence and that physicality, doesn't that have merit? Doesn't that have weight?
It absolutely does. I mean, I would say he's kind of like an Alshon Jeffrey type player. You know, Kelvin Benjamin is just 6'5", so he's the difference maker right there automatically. So I think with Treadwell, and the way I was taught to evaluate receivers, you have to be able to do one of two things, run past people or just get physical and go over the top. So he's physical, can go over the top. He's going to – the ball's his when it's in the air, and that's what you really like about him.
Does he win the 50-50 balls?
He wins the 50-50 okay. balls. Yeah, he has that Dez Bryant quality of when the ball's in the air, it's mine.
Well, and you need that if you're not going to separate. And right. I know Mike Evans, another guy a couple years ago that is similar. He's had some drop issues now in the NFL the last couple of years, which he's trying to get over. Sticking on the offensive side of the ball, if you take a look at this first round, what's the chances that Ezekiel Elliott's the first non-quarterback skill position player off the board?
That's a great chance. Yeah, I would put money on that all day, you know, especially because, you know, look at the wide receiver group. Like, Treadwell's good, but he's not like what you would traditionally see as a top 10 pick. Michael Thomas from Ohio State is another guy, really talented, big, fits that mold. Probably not going to go before a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, who you have to start thinking about him at pick 10. I think you could start to see him maybe as an option there. I don't know that he gets past the Colts at 18. So you have about a 10 to 18 range for him. And like, if we're saying non-skill players, or skill players on offense, he's going to be one of the first ones to go.
It's interesting. I mean, we had Tom Rock on earlier and some guys on yesterday. And a lot of people feel that, you know, the Giants, their philosophy is best player on the board. But yep. We know how many needs they need on the defensive side of the ball. What a conundrum they're going to be in, right, at 10 if Elliott is still on the board.
A lot of people feel he at 10, he will be the best player on the board. The Giants roll with him.
Yeah, and that is the tough thing. And I thought last year they reached for Eric Flowers, who, in my opinion, wasn't the best player on the board. I thought they tried to fill a need there. So this year we'll see if they get back to that philosophy, that old Jerry Reese school of BPA. But we know he loves defensive linemen, and now, you know, you have a new coaching staff in there, a new head coach at least, and it'll be interesting to see what his philosophy is, you know, with an offensive background. Does he want a three-down running back like Ezekiel Elliott? How much emphasis does he put on the running back position in general? So this draft will tell us a lot about the Giants. Free agency, I think, will too, because what do they do on the defensive line? If they can lock some pass rushers up there, then maybe that allows them to go after a running back in the first round. Otherwise, you have to start thinking about guys like DeForest Buckner in the first round because they have to improve the pass rush.
A lot of people don't feel that he'll be there at 10.
DeForest Buckner? There's a good chance he's not. I mean, he is a legitimate top 10 pick in this draft. It kind of depends on how early the quarterbacks go. You know, if we see three quarterbacks go in the top 10, I think he'll be there.
But you think we will?
I think so, yeah.
Really?
I especially if Kaepernick gets traded. You're going to see you got an opening in San Francisco now. And then you have the, you know, teams like the Rams need a quarterback pretty badly. They could come up into the top 10. They have 2 second-round picks this year. That's a team that they love to trade on draft day. So I could see them come up into the top 10.
How about Dallas? Do they pick a quarterback?
I don't think they do right now. And I could be completely reading the tea leaves wrong here. But I think that Jerry Jones and that staff, they know they have a short window to win with Tony Romo. You don't pick number 4 overall very often if you're the Dallas Cowboys.
That's a good point.
Go get an impact player. You can get a quarterback in round 2 like a Connor Cook, Dak Prescott in round 3. You can get other quarterbacks to groom behind Tony Romo.
Everybody is in love with Miles Jack.
They should be. They should be.
I mean, everybody's in love with him.
He is. He might be the best player in this draft. Like, if you want to stack your board, it's Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey, in my opinion, and then everyone else. Like, he is a freak talent. I've told people all week, he would be the best running back in this draft if he wanted to play offense. Like, he is special, special, special.
Well, here's a question. If Jalen Smith was healthy, would he be in that group?
He would be number 1, without a doubt. Like,
really?
I would have no hesitation. He started the year as number 1 for me. He is he's the best linebacker prospect I've seen since Patrick Willis. And I thought Willis was like, this guy's going to be an all-pro from day one. Jalen Smith, healthy. There aren't many people like him. 6'3", 245 pounds. Arrested quarterback. I saw him play slot corner at times. He plays middle linebacker. You watch him against Texas. He shadowed those mobile quarterbacks. He almost broke Tyrone Swoops in half in that game. He hit him so hard. Jalen Smith, I hope he's back healthy because the NFL needs players like that.
Well, so, I need it real quick. Okay. Do you think he's going to get out of the top 10 with that injury? Do you think he's going to drop to the teens? How do you think teams are going to evaluate this process with him with the injury?
There's so much speculation out there right now. It depends on who you talk to, but my mock draft is coming out next week. I'll give you a little hint. He's going 8 to Miami because I think he's too talented. This is like a Todd Gurley situation. I think he's too talented to fall very far.
Well, it's interesting. So in listening to you, you think that there is a chance that all 3 quarterbacks can go in the top 10. That would, I mean, Giants fans that are watching right now, that's got to sound really good to them.
It's
because
great news.
because a guy like Ramsey or a guy like Miles Jack could fall to them then, if you're saying that 3 of the quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10.
Yeah, well, you know, we never thought last year Leonard Williams would fall to 6.
No, that's for sure.
And the Jets were sitting there like, are you serious right now?
Somebody pinch me.
The best player in the draft.
We don't need him, but we got to take him.
Exactly. Yeah. So anything could happen. That's why I always tell fans who say that will never happen. You can't speak in definitives when it comes to the draft because it gets crazy. You know, teams panic. Teams try to fill needs instead of going for value. So really anything can happen.
Well, in a sec, we had this conversation yesterday about Noah Spence, and obviously he's a very polarizing player.
Yes.
Some teams might not even have him on their board. You know, last year at this time, we were talking about Randy Gregory as a top 6 or 7 pick, and then all of a sudden he's the end of the second round.
Right.
How do you see teams evaluating Noah Spence?
I think the difference with Noah Spence is he's been clean for 2 years, and he's been drug tested by Ohio State and Eastern Kentucky voluntarily for the last 2 years. So here you have, like, as long as he passes the test here, obviously, you have a track record of him making good decisions. With Randy Gregory, he failed the test here.
Like, true.
So it really backed up all those concerns that you had. Shane Ray was another guy. There were concerns. You get pulled over. You have some weed in the car. Like, those are things that the key is being as clean as you can be as a prospect up until the draft. Because the closer to the draft that you make a mistake, the more you're going to fall on draft day. And I think with Gregory, that was the big thing. Everyone knew that kid liked to smoke weed at Nebraska. Everybody knew it. You come here and fail the test. That brings into question your work ethic, if maybe you have an addiction problem, because you know from the minute you declare for the draft, you're going to get drug tested here. If you can't pass this test, you're not going to pass the one in training camp.
Oh, and look what happened last year. Now they're saying he might be suspended 4 games for failing 3 tests in his rookie year in the NFL.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's more about looking for a pattern of bad decisions. I think Noah Spence has a good pattern right now of making the right decisions. And Urban Meyer is going to bat for him. Like, Urban Meyer will talk to anybody who will listen.
He goes to bat for every one of his players.
He does. But I think the fact that it wasn't Ohio State that kicked him out, because I've heard people say.
He still feels Tim Tebow should be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, we'll disagree on that. Coach Meyer and I will. But they've supported Noah Spence. I think that says a lot about him.
Also, another thing, and that I've been hearing is that there's actually a lot of teams that this synthetic marijuana. I know nothing about it.
I don't either.
I don't even know what it is. But like I'm hearing like there are a number of teams that are, because I guess it's just very popular right now, that they're worried that there's a lot of these kids that are coming into this draft that have used it some point in time. I mean, it's more so than any other time.
Right. It's a big red flag. And, you know, it's like you said, I'm 32. I have no idea what any of this stuff is. I never feel so old as when these guys, when it's drugs and music. I have no idea what they're doing anymore. But it's a big thing. And, you know, a guy who, Robert Kimdiche, all season, we talked about him as top five, top 10 pick. You know, now there's questions about he falls out of a fourth floor hotel window and there's weed in the room. And that's a big, you know, you got a couple different red flags on one incident there. So he's a polarizing guy who, you know, normally you would have said he's a good fit for the Giants. They need a pass rusher. He's a freak athlete. But those red flags could push him down to the second round, just like Randy Gregory last year.
Well, you know what? You mentioned it, and we talked about some of the options for the Giants. Defensive line, pass rushers, you know, whether you're talking about ends, three technique guys. Who do you see that could be there at 10 that you think would be a good fit for what the Giants like to do defensively with Steve Spagnuolo?
Well, yeah, you know, we could take guys like Joey Bosa off the board because I don't think there's a way that he would be there. DeForest Buckner
By the way, did you sit in on his press conference just about 30 minutes ago?
I watched it.
He's a laid-back dude.
He's laid-back,
yeah. He's hilarious.
I'm just glad he shaved off the mustache because that was not a good look for him when he had that before. So he was dropping down my board just on the mustache.
Just on the stash, yeah.
Also, I heard his great-grandfather is like a real, like really big into the mob.
That's the rumor.
I'd be worried to draft him.
He'd fit in great with you guys then. Yeah. You know, he's got the New York thing
in New York.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Great Italian restaurant.
Right. No, but I think DeForest Buckner is the guy who could be there and would be a great fit because he's.
Can he play three technique in a 4-3?
Yeah, he could play three technique. I know some teams like him as a defensive end, as a strong side defensive
really?
End.
Really? Wow.
What he can do athletically is rare, and I think he'll have a great week here. You know, you start to talk about, like, Sheldon Rankins. I think that's a little bit too early for him. The mm-hmm. pass rusher from Louisville, a little bit small, 6'1", 299 pounds. But, you know, Aaron Donald's not real big, and there's no one who can stop him right now. So that helps a guy like Sheldon Rankins a lot.
How about the two Clemson kids?
Yeah, Shaq Lawson and Kevin Dodd. They're kind of interesting because I think you can move them around. Obviously, they played defensive end in a 4-3 scheme, but they're also young guys who are like right around 285 pounds. So you have some wiggle room to go, and they might have shed weight to run faster here, but they both play pretty heavy. So you could maybe kick one of those guys inside. Kevin Dodd had, you know, two of the best games anyone had all year to finish the season. He's 24 years old, though. I think that will be something that teams worry about a little bit.
He's 24. I didn't realize that.
Years
wow.
Old,
okay.
And really just had, you know, one season of production because they had Vic Beasley there ahead of him. But I like Shaq Lawson a lot. I think that a lot of us draft experts are overrating the fact that he played injured down the stretch and wasn't himself in those final two games. What he did over the last 2 years is pretty impressive. So he's a guy I like in the top 15. And if you're talking you filling a need and a value at 10, he might be a good pick.
Now, is he more of a two-way player, or can he be a dynamic edge rusher, you know, one of those twitchy guys that can really turn the corner on
you? I don't think he's one of those real twitchy guys. I think he's more of a power player.
Okay.
You know, more of a Coney Ealy, like, you know, who was on the Super Bowl, or Greg Hardy without the off-field questions, that type of defensive.
Got game. It.
Not your Cameron Wakes or Olivier Vernon's.
All right, let's go beyond the first round, and I know how much film you watch and how in the know you are. Give us some names of some guys that you think are going to go in the later rounds that you feel are going to be complete studs.
Well, I, you know, being from Missouri, there are two kids on the offensive line there that I think are amazing. Connor McGovern, who played left tackle, he's better at guard. And he has already had a great day today, which you would expect. He is a monster. And then Evan Baum, their center, who is one of those guys, like, these Mizzou offensive line products, like, they don't bust. You know, Justin Britt, Mitch Morse, they come in and they just play well for 10 years. So those are two guys I really like. And especially, you know, with New York, you've got to start to fill some needs. You know, Jeff Schwartz is gone. You've got to figure out what they're doing at right tackle long term. So those late round offensive linemen are guys that I really like.
And also in the second and third round, the Giants, you know, pick high in the rounds. And everything I've heard is that, much like the wide receiver class a couple years ago, this defensive tackle class
it's
this
unreal.
Year, you can get starters in rounds three or round four. Give me some of those guys that you think could be a day two or even an early day three pick, a defensive tackle that you think teams can target, bring in and say, you know what, we can plug this guy in year one and play him.
Yeah, Hassan Ridgeway at Texas would be that guy. And I was kind of bullish on him when he first came out. It was like, I don't know if this is the best decision, but you watch him play over the last 2 years. He played nose tackle. He played three technique. He played one tech. He moved all around, especially this past year once Malcolm Brown was gone. He had to become the man on that defensive line, and he was unblockable at times.
Wow.
So he is a guy that I like. That he's not a finished product. He's a little bit raw, but you're getting great value. And a guy at 6'3", 311 pounds, he can play anywhere on the D-line for you. So if you're talking late day two, that's where I would start to target someone like that. The guy I used to love that I didn't think was going to blow up is Vernon Butler. I thought round two, like, this kid would be a steal.
Senior Bowl helped him, huh?
Senior Bowl. Now it's like you have to draft him at, like, 20 to get him. So he was the guy I had in my pocket as your round two player, but he's definitely blown up. On the D-line, like, there's so many good players. Jahad Ward at Illinois is someone that he's going to have an amazing, amazing day here. He's 6'5", 300 pounds. I posted a video the other day on Twitter of him dunking a basketball, like reverse dunking a ball. He's just a freak athletically, and he's very raw coming out of that scheme. But he could play inside as a three technique and definitely get production. Malik Collins from Nebraska is another one. Play dropped off a little bit this past year with Mike Riley there. The scheme changed. But he is a very good inside pass rusher.
And let's talk about secondary, because obviously Giants with Prince Amukamara, not sure what's going to happen there. They suffered a lot of injuries in the safety position. They're expecting them to come back and with good health. But still, I think that's an area they're going to focus in on.
Yeah, I like the safety class a lot this year. Darian Thompson is a free safety from Boise State. He's just a playmaker. I mean, he does it all. Now, he might not be there at the top of the second round. That's the only issue. But at strong safety, guys like Jeremy Cash from Duke are very good players. Keanu Neal from Florida, he might even sniff the end of the first round just because of how physical and aggressive he is. You got Von Bell from Ohio State, he's a good free safety prospect. And at corner, I actually think it's a pretty deep corner class. You know, someone like Eli Apple from Ohio State might fall to the second round. Xavier Howard from Butler is probably the kid that not enough people know about right now. From Baylor. Long, fast, like twitchy. He definitely fits that mold of what you want. He just needs coached up a little bit.
I hear that Houston kid might have huge combine.
Yeah, he's a stud. And so is Harlan Miller from Southeast Louisiana. There's some small school corners this year that are really, really good players. And Harlan Miller had a great Senior Bowl. He was the best corner down there, hands down.
You talked about Ezekiel Elliott. How do you sparse that second group of running backs? You know, the Derrick Henrys. Mm-hmm. You got the kid from Alabama that people like, the kid from Louisiana that people like. How do you parse that next group? Where are they going to land? How do you compare their skill sets?
Yeah, this one should be great for me because I like to use the combine to break ties on players. So I like Paul Perkins from UCLA a lot. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good three-down running back. I really like Kenneth Dixon from Louisiana Tech. Like, that kid just, he does everything really well. He's kind of a little jitterbug. Derrick Henry, I'm not as high on Derrick Henry because I think at some point you can actually be too big for the NFL. And I think that's where he's at right now. To be almost 6'3", 247 pounds, you start to look at how many running backs around that size have had success in the NFL.
You look at Eddie George, and the list doesn't go much further than that.
That's it. It's Eddie George. Yeah, you know, even Jerome Bettis, who was heavy, was short. So he wasn't as easy to bring down. I think Derrick Henry, for all his athletic attributes, he's not a very good running back prospect, in my opinion. So, hey, I've been wrong on these running backs before. Maybe he'll prove me wrong. I hope he does because he'll make a lot of money. But I'm not real big on Derrick Henry.
All right, before we let you go, what are you Bleacher Report-wise? I know that you guys do a lot when it comes to the draft. You guys are live, putting up a lot of videos as the draft is unfolding. What's your game plan?
Our game plan here, we'll be doing daily videos, you know, kind of breaking down guys who made money, lost money, who helped themselves, hurt themselves. And then next week I'll have a mock draft. A new big board will come out. And like you said, for the draft, we'll be doing not necessarily live, but pretty much instant updates and breaking down every pick as they happen. And everything goes straight to our TeamStream app, so it's really easy and convenient. You don't have to wait around at home to watch it on TV or anything.
And you do every round.
Every round, every pick. It's crazy.
Insanity. And by the way, you gave us a sneak peek. You said Jalen Smith at 8, and I'm going to get greedy here. Can you give us a sneak peek at who you have the Giants at 10 in your next mock?
I'm pretty sure it's
out?
DeForest Buckner. I'm pretty sure
that's okay.
I'm away
from
my computer.
Well, especially if you're saying that three quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10, then, yeah.
Pushes him down there to you guys, which I think he would be a tremendous fit in that defense.
And I'm assuming that Lynch, the kid from Memphis, is your third quarterback
in
the top 10?
Yep, okay. Yep.
Interesting. Matt, great stuff as always. We appreciate
the time.
Appreciate
it, guys. Yes,
thanks so much.
See you again.
Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, a very, very loyal contributor to Big Blue Kickoff. Bobby, thank you for joining us. We'll see you in a bit. We'll be back right after this with more.
Thank you.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. John Schmoke and Nita Marks, our third two-hour show from Indianapolis at the NFL Combine. Folks, want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. It's as simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Having a lot of fun in Indianapolis, a lot of stuff going on. We have the drills starting up today with the offensive linemen. The running backs will go later on today, and nothing's more fun than watching those, you know, big 300-pounders try to run 40 yards at a time. And I understand the guy next to us, our next guest, Field Yates from ESPN, we welcomed him to the show, decided to run the 40 today.
You know, some days you wake up and you just want to achieve greatness.
Who suckered you into that move? Because there's really nothing good that can come out of that for you.
Well, a couple pulled hamstrings.
I said good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
but you played football though.
Yeah, I did, but Division III football, you know, in
where'd you play?
Wesleyan University.
Oh, you're Wesleyan kid. Okay, nice.
You know, so a couple of years there, I'm not sure that qualifies as a, you know, long and glorious NFL or football career.
What was your 40 there, and then what did you run today?
So today, I think I ran somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 or 12 seconds. I think my 40 time at Wesleyan was maybe like 4.8, maybe on a good day. Speed was never my thing. As a matter of fact, not much athletically was my thing.
Really? Did you just clock 11? No.
I'm not sure that we actually got the accurate
reading.
we'll leave the people.
So this is great. Make it up. What was your number?
425.
425.
I almost broke Chris Johnson's record. I could
have
been a millionaire.
I was just going to say, maybe running back. Is anybody up to that Adidas challenge? And again, if you're not aware, Adidas has a challenge out right now. Whoever can break CJ, not so 2K any longer, his record for the 40
he had
time
a good year last year for the Cardinals
in
yeah.
until he got hurt.
Yeah.
In Adidas cleats, they have to be in Adidas cleats. Will win $1 million.
I don't think it's going to happen this year.
No.
A couple of years ago, Brandon Cooks was the first player to win that Adidas competition. I believe it was $100,000 for the fastest 40 time in the, I think it's called the Adizero cleat.
Okay.
He was the fastest that year. Came away with $100,000 and I think like a cool briefcase too, which everything counts. I don't believe that anybody would be breaking Chris Johnson's combine record. I actually saw him say a couple of days ago, Chris Johnson say that he was surprised it stood this long, but listen, it's hard to run a 4.4.
Yeah, it is.
You know, like that's an incredible time. To break 4.3, that is exceptional talent.
And Field, of course, spent time in the front office for both the Patriots and the Chiefs in Field. What are teams doing now, besides watching the guys in the field? We know about that. In terms of preparing with their personnel departments for free agency, taking care of their own business, looking at what guys are going to be cut loose from other teams, what's the process right now for NFL teams?
Well, certainly we have about 10 days until the start of the new league year and free agency. So
yeah.
Teams are now working hard to, if you can, get some of your own guys locked up. Teams like Seattle have got 17 free agents. They've got to find a way to make sure that some of those guys don't have the chance to get to the open market because they want them back and those players want to be back. We've obviously, as we've seen with the Giants, some roster shuffling in terms of moving on from players, creating cap space so that when the league year officially begins on March 9th at 4 p.m., a Wednesday afternoon, if there's a player that fits the bill for the Giants and one of their needs that they've had the conversations with the agent for during that three-day legal negotiating period, you can put ink to paper by 4:01 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. So it's certainly getting to know the players on a personal level, formal and informal interviews. You're doing all of the necessary measurement checks. And it's funny how guys can seemingly grow even within like a month span. I saw like, you know, a tight end had grown like a half an inch.
Really? Interesting.
Over the past 30 days. Like, I'm still waiting for my big gross bird to go from 5'10 to like 6'2. So there's still some hope. But, you know, the point for every team here is, and for personnel directors, is you've got to have the league memorized by the time the league year begins.
Yeah.
I mean, that's their job. And you think that's sort of implicit to the job. But that's what part of the next 10 or so days is all about.
Now, of course, you're with ESPN. You know, you work with Adam Schefter and Mort and Polian and all these guys who are so in the know, so have their finger on the pulse of what's going on with every team. What are you hearing about the Giants, in specifically with JPP, Robert Ayers, and Prince Amukamara?
I think that every team right now is negotiating with their own guy, for the most part. I mean, the good players, right? Like, JPP, obviously the last year, unique circumstances. But we know peak JPP isn't a good player, he's a great player. And we know that Prince Amukamara plays a position that gets paid in free agency.
It's premium.
It's a premium spot in free agency. And Robert Ayers, if you sign him, I think people always want the free agent signing to be, like, this is the key player at this particular position. Robert Ayers may not have to be the number one defensive end for a team, but he's a functional starting, quality starting defensive end for a team somewhere in the National Football League. So I would not be surprised if each one of those players are on the very much on the radar for the Giants to bring back next year. It's just a matter of dollars and cents. Let's not lie about it, right? You've got to find a point that the player's comfortable playing for and that you feel is a fit under your cap constraints. And we saw the Giants make some moves recently. They created a bunch of space. John Beeson's retirement cleared up $4.5 million for the 2016 league year. So there's that shuffling that's going on right now. And if you don't want to use the tag, because one of the downsides to the franchise tag is that some players use that as, all right, if you're willing to pay me for 2016 $8 million on the tag.
Multiply that by that times
right,
six,
exactly.
And let's go to work.
There's my number. Whereas the teams don't view it that way, right?
Right?
Some teams view it as our ideal deal for you is not that number per year, but we are willing to pay you that for 1 year so that we don't lose you to the open market elsewhere.
A la Kirk Cousins with the Redskins.
No, that would be the example that I think everybody will turn to this
yeah.
year. Is Kirk Cousins, in the eyes of Washington, a $20 million a year quarterback, which is basically what the franchise tag is? We don't know the answer for sure, but you'd think that maybe they'd be more comfortable, let's call it $16 million. So the question is, does Kirk want to meet somewhere in the middle? Does he want to say, my line has been drawn in the sand at $19.9 million. Pay up, or I'll play on the tag, and maybe next year you guys have a harder decision to make.
Go ahead, Anya. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I just, you know, in talking to a number of people, there's also this concern that you're going to, like, I'll throw out Malik Jackson, for example.
Yeah.
Mo Wilkerson, for example. There are some concerns that once these guys get their payday, that their production is going to – that they overproduce this year because they knew it was a payday. And we talk about it in fantasy, right? You always
–
you want to own that contract year guy because you know he's going to ball for you. I mean, there is truth to that. But there are – as a front office person, how do you get that information? How do you find out if I'm going to pay this guy, if I'm going to overpay this guy, because we're expecting a lot of guys to be overpaid, how do I know that I'm going to get that value back and this just wasn't a one-year thing?
Here's the golden rule of player evaluation that Bill Belichick will impart to someone who's young and part of his staff. We pay or we draft or we trade or we sign traits, not production. We don't sign for the fact that you had 10 sacks last year. We sign for the fact that you've got exceptional first-step quickness, or you've got powerful hands, or you've got excellent length, or you've got ball skills, whatever it is. That's what you're drafting. And, I mean, let's turn this to the Giants for a second and go to the draft. If you look at Odell Beckham Jr.'s production in college, very good. But was it rare?
Not elite.
Not what it's been over the first 2 years in the NFL.
No, not even close.
You know, tougher competition. Odell Beckham Jr. has been a better pro player, stats-wise, than he was as a college player. You know why? Because the traits were always there. It wasn't as if the Giants were worried about the traits. If you overthought the production, you might say, well, you know, he only had whatever it was, X number of catches his senior year or his final year at LSU. So that's a good example of, like, you know something? I don't care if the guy had 5 catches or 100 catches. If he's got the goods that Odell Beckham Jr. has, make him your first round pick a couple years ago and reap the rewards 2 years into the deal.
And you mentioned it before. Front offices want a set of value that they're comfortable giving to a player.
Yep.
But in free agency, oftentimes, if you want to get the marquee guys, you're going to have to stretch that a little bit. And having to make that decision in this market this year with the cap continuing to rise,
yep,
so much money being out there, and quite frankly, it's a limited player pool. Every year it's limited. You can like or hate the players all you want. There's X number of players, there's Y number of dollars, and oftentimes Y is a lot greater than X. And
exactly right.
How do teams judge when they should go that extra mile to bring in that guy where you have to pay the premium, maybe above what you want?
I think the best teams are the ones that set their own market. And I know that's hard because, you know, eventually if you set your own market and it's always too low, you're not going to get good players, right?
Right.
I think the best teams are the ones that, and sometimes it takes years to build this. You've either got incumbent pieces on your roster so that if we miss out on this player, well, you know something, we turn back to the plan of development with the player that we already have. But the minute you start to get or start to lose your discipline in the free agency open market is the year that all of a sudden you become one of these teams. And we see them around the league right now. And this is a team that's been successful. But, you know, New Orleans is facing a very difficult cap situation right now. As a matter of fact, they've been sort of kicking the can with contracts. They're restructuring the likes of Cam Jordan and other players that are just sort of tinkering with the deals up, and it eventually catches up to you.
And they just let go of Marques Colston, for example.
They're eating like $30 million in dead cap space.
Is Drew in that discussion?
$30 million cap it for 2016.
And that's one of the problems. That's why it took them so long to negotiate that contract, because they didn't want to be in this situation.
Right. And you imagine, they have $30 million tied to Drew Brees next year. I believe it's almost 25, if not closer to $30 million dead money.
Wow.
So if the cap comes in at $155 million, $154, let's round it to $150. You know, $60 out of $150 million, right? That's 40% of your cap is other on players that aren't there or one player. And granted, the quarterback is the most important spot, but it's why the teams that are able to show the discipline, and really I think the best way to succeed in the NFL is draft and develop. The Broncos this year would sort of suggest, well, you know, free agency matters. I think it's important to note that the epicenter of the sort of development of this roster was when Peyton Manning became available as a free agent. How often does a quarterback like that become available?
Right.
The answer is once every
20 years,
you know?
Yeah, but look at all the guys on defense now that are the free agents. They're all draft picks. Danny Trevathan, Brandon Marshall, the restricted guy, Malik Jackson, Derek Wolfe, who they re-signed, Von Miller. Those are all draft picks.
Sure, you can supplement with DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib because it's like, you know something? We just thought we've got Peyton Manning under contract for 5 years. Let's not waste our window here.
No, of course not.
Let's
go for it.
Make sure we go big. Whereas if they didn't sign Peyton Manning that year, I don't know this for sure, but maybe DeMarcus Ware is playing somewhere else. Maybe it's, you know, something we've got to build the roster a different way.
No question.
So, for the most part, the best course of action in the NFL is draft and develop. The Giants have been, and even the Giants in their recent Super Bowl runs, they've been teams that have, I mean, look at the core players on those rosters, or undrafted free agents that turn into studs.
Victor Cruz. Correct.
Eli Manning draft pick, Justin Tuck.
Hakeem Nicks, another one.
All these
JPP,
guys have made major contributions on championship teams, or on championship years for them. Not all of them, but a lot of them have been draft and developed players.
I got one more for you, real quick. If you have a lot of money to spend, like the Raiders or the Jaguars or the Giants, can you effectively spend that amount of money in 1 year in free agency without, getting enough quality players to actually fill that cap space in year one, but also not putting yourself in a hole in future years where you're paying for these contracts 2 or 3 years down the road? Or can you structure those contracts to make it work?
Yeah,
it's tricky, right?
Yeah, in some ways. But in some ways, if you're the Giants and you've got whatever it is, close to $50 million, whatever the number is, because we'll figure out once the cap is set. You know, if you feel like the play this year is to front-load contracts because, you know, we don't have as many targets on our radar, or we feel like these are the guys we have to retain, but a couple of years down the road, we're going to have to eventually extend Odell Beckham Jr. and guys like that down the road.
And that won't be cheap, by the way.
I can imagine he's going to be okay. You know, like, I feel like dinner on Odell for about a year straight.
So, yeah.
You know? You can afford to take a multiple year snapshot. Now the problem is the NFL. So many teams have so little patience. The Giants are not. They are the trend more, or they are the exception more than the rule.
Right.
They are willing to be patient. So that helps, because if you're looking at a five-year snapshot of your cap space and you say, well, we're a little light here, Seattle's a good example of that. They've been able to sort of use that five-year window or four-year window with Russell Wilson's rookie contract and build the roster accordingly. Front load here, back load there. Now that Russell Wilson's making $20 million a season,
and
obviously things are a little bit different. But during those first 3 years when he made like a total of $2 million, that cap situation was, all right, we can sort of envision things more than just a year in, you know, 2-3 years in.
I have two quick questions before I let you go on.
and
run
maybe,
my 40s.
Maybe try your 40 one more time. And that is number one, the free agent class coming out next year.
Yep.
Is it sexier? We used the word sexy a little bit earlier on the show. Is it sexier in regard to the players that might be available?
Well, the tag will always sort of dictate how much of the free agent class actually intrigues people. You know, this year, if we didn't have the franchise tag and you had Von Miller and Josh Norman available,
and Wilkerson,
now Sean Jeffrey, and Mo Wilkerson, that'd be a great class.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
By the time these tags are done, which we've got about 4 or 5 days now before the tag deadline, this class looks – that's been one of the things I've taken away so far from the Combine is I don't think NFL guys are really jazzed up about this free agent class.
Exactly.
If you sort of go through the obvious tag candidates and eliminate them. But I think next year has a chance to be a lot more enticing. At the same time, if, you know, we could be talking about guys who are getting the tag. We could be having the same tag conversation a year from now and say, all right.
Or they could be extended between now and then, like the Eagles are doing with all their guys.
The Eagles got a bunch of guys. You got the Patriots with 4 cornerstone defensive players all during the final year of their contract.
And number two, and this is not Giants related, but we had this conversation before we started the show, and I will use the word shocked. I'm shocked that Colin Kaepernick is requesting a trade. If you look around the league and you look at coaches. There's different philosophies. One coach is, this is my system. I'm going to implement you, and you're going to play in my system. The other one is, all right, let's see what my quarterback's skill and talent is, and let me build a system that's going to accentuate all he can bring to the table. This is a perfect storm for Colin Kaepernick and Chip Kelly. If there's one quarterback out there that can play in his system, it's this. Like, why is he requesting a trade? What do you know? What have you heard? Like, this is shocking to me.
Yeah, so I'd be curious to see, I don't know specifically what goes into a trade request, right? Because if you're requesting a trade, are you saying, trade me somewhere where I can start right away? Does that mean that you have an assurance? Hey, I'm requesting you to trade me, and by the way, here are my 3 teams that are on my list.
And are you willing to maybe work your contract to make yourself willing to another team to get you?
Are you willing to trade me?
Yeah.
And by the way, what comes along with that is that, you know, in part of this trade, the team agrees that I'm gonna redo my deal 3 years at $8 million a year as opposed to whatever it is, 4 or 5 left at $17-18 million per year. Colin doesn't have any leverage here.
No, not really.
Colin's under contract, and I get it. The teams and agents and players can work together. But if San Francisco wants to give Chip 1 year to work with Colin Kaepernick, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But if they do, all they have to do is stand by and just wait till we get to the portion of the offseason when coaches and players can work together. They don't have the obligation to Colin to trade him. And frankly, if I'm looking around the league, certainly there's a shortage of quarterbacks. But I don't look at the solutions and say, all right, well, let's take Los Angeles, for example, a team that probably still needs a new quarterback. Does Colin Kaepernick make that team dramatically better if they trade for him? I'm not sure the answer is yes.
I think it depends on the coach and the system.
Yeah.
I spoke to 2 defensive coordinators yesterday when that news broke, and both defensive coordinators have San Francisco on their schedule, and they were ecstatic.
Yeah.
They were ecstatic.
Yeah.
They said, I don't know. I couldn't look at our schedule and say that's a definite win. With Colin Kaepernick and Chip Kelly combined, now I know that's a win.
There you go.
Because there's no way Blaine Gabbert, with Blaine Gabbert at the quarterback position, now it's 11. It's 10-11. With Colin Kaepernick at the quarterback position, it's 11-11. Like there has to be a guy allotted for Colin Kaepernick, not Blaine Gabbert.
It changes
the dynamic.
Ask the Packers about peak Colin Kaepernick. You know, they saw him a couple times in the playoffs, and he ran for what felt like 500 yards. I think it was close to 300 of the 2 games. But peak Colin Kaepernick, if that can be resurrected, I understand the sentiment that the perfect system might be Chip, where it puts the quarterback in a spot to use his athleticism. Frequently.
And, Theo, before we say goodbye, I want to get at least one comment from you on the draft class. You talked about Frazier having to touch on the guys that are running here. Giants at 10.
Yep.
Give me some guys that you think could be fits, that you think will be sitting there at 10 and still be on the board.
So certainly free agency can dictate how the needs are.
But absolutely.
If pass rusher remains a need, everybody's talking about Noah Spence, formerly Ohio State, big-time athlete. Production's good, even though they're talking about not drafting traits for production, but the traits and the production align. Seems like a name that will certainly be on the radar at pick 10. If Prince Mukamara is playing somewhere else next season, cornerback could be a need.
Is there a corner good enough to be taken to 10 in this draft?
That's probably the question there. Is like, you know, is it a Mackenzie Alexander from Clemson?
The Hargroves kids that people like.
Yeah. And you know, they're probably, like, I'm imagining Jalen Ramsey, Florida State defensive back,
will
be long by that point. But we're early on in the process. I'm looking forward to see what we learn over the next 60 or so days. Offensive line certainly is. Maybe the offensive line answer in New York right now is just like, here are the pieces. Let's just make sure they, like, let's just align them properly.
Right.
As opposed to we need to replace them. But, you know, that's going to be an interesting spot to see. Depth across the NFL is not strong right now, the offensive line. There just aren't a bunch of teams who not only have five good offensive linemen, but they've got two or three capable back. It's hard to find good offensive linemen, especially because every year it feels like we're seeing these defensive linemen or outside linebackers who are more and more athletic. It's incredible. I mean, Von Miller, it's like a running back out there in terms of athletic skills, and he's playing pass rush. He's a pass rusher, you know?
And frankly, these college systems don't train offensive linemen to play NFL football either. They're playing in two-point stances in the spread, and you're not ready to play NFL football.
You know what the first thing NFL offensive line coaches having to teach their guys some days, some of these rookies?
Put your hand in dirt.
A three-point stance. Think about that. That's fundamental, you know? But and that's not a knock at the college kids, but they spend 4 years, you know, bending their knees and with a hand up. That's it. So.
Field, thank you so much.
Awesome stuff.
No problem, guys.
Thank you so much.
Always great. Always great.
ESPN.
Go, try that 40 again. I'm not – that 11 time doesn't sit well with me.
I'm aiming for 9 seconds.
I know you're better than that.
We thank you for joining us. Plenty more from the Combine Indianapolis on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go – that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
We're back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Down the home stretch. John Schmoke and Nina Marks with you. Day 3 at the Combine in Indianapolis. We've brought in a lot of guys, and our cleanup hitter for the week of shows will be Tony Pauline, Draft Insider Donette. It is a lot of pressure. We've had a lot of good guests. Tony also doing work for the Eagles and also for SNY. He'll be doing some mitzvah this weekend as well. And Tony, obviously a big weekend for the draft. The theme we've gotten from scouts this week is that very impressive defensive draft class, especially on the defensive line. Do you share that sentiment? And can the Giants, if they don't go front seven or front four first round, are they going to be able to find guys second, third, fourth round to maybe help out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think defensive tackle is very strong there. I love the space linebackers, the three-down linebackers. People think of linebackers, you know, just rushing up the field. In this draft, you got a lot of three-down guys who can rush the passer, who can play the run, who
are also
very, good in coverage. I mean, three-down players, some good cornerbacks, but I think your outside space linebackers and your defensive tackles really head the group from the defensive side of the ball. Later on, you got some decent defensive ends that can rush the passer, where the Giants may look in the second or third round, second day of the draft.
All right, so two things that have been communicated to us so far today. Number one, we just had Field Yates on. He thinks there's a chance that DeForest Buckner could fall to the Giants at 10. If that's true, is that a no-brainer pick?
No, I don't think so. You know, DeForest Buckner, to me, is a better 3-4 defensive lineman than he is a 4-3. 6-7 and change. I don't think he's a great pass rusher. He's a good pass rusher. He's better in a Baltimore Ravens type of system. I know that people just pin him in right there. I just don't think he's a good fit for the Giants system. I think maybe at that point in time they look at a linebacker, or maybe they trade down. I just don't think that if DeForest Buckner's there with the 10th pick, the Giants are going to go running up to the table with his name on the card.
We had Matt Miller on not too long ago. Matt Miller feels that there's going to be three quarterbacks taken in the top 10, which really would bode well for the Giants. Maybe a Miles Jack, somebody like that, a Ramsey falling to the Giants at 10. We've seen it before. Is that a possibility? Do you agree with that? You think three quarterbacks in the top 10?
No. I think two. I think Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. Maybe not in that order. I don't think Paxton Lynch is going to be a top 10 pick. I think he's going to fall. He's not as polished. He's not as polished both on the field as well as intellectually compared to those two guys. And those guys will tend to slip a little bit. So I think you're going to get two at most. I don't think you'll get three.
And you don't get the guys that will be there at 10. If you're looking for a pass rusher at 10, we've talked a lot about Noah Spence. So moving past him, the next group, the Dodds, the Lawsons, guys like that, who do you like at 10 on that defensive line that can maybe create some heat up front going after the quarterback?
At 10, none. I think all those guys you mentioned are good pass rushers,
but
their reaches at 10. It's a big stretch. I think those guys are basically bottom half of round one type of players. I like Kevin Dodd a lot. I like him better than Shaq Lawson, but he's more of a bottom third of round one guy. Shaq Lawson's a good pass rusher. He's banged up. He doesn't have the same body type of Kevin Dodd. He's not going to be as big. He's not going to be as stout against the run. But again, I mean, you know, that's a situation. If you take either of those guys at 10, it's a bit of a reach.
Interesting.
All right. So I just, this is so much fun. I love this. So Giants sitting at 10. Let's say that Ramsey, Jack are off the board. Bosa, of course, I think everybody's anticipating that. Ezekiel Elliott is on the board. Do you go with Elliott, or do you maybe try to trade down? Because now you're saying that the defensive talent that's still there, that the value is more towards the lower end of the first round. If you're in that war room with the Giants, do you take Elliott if he's still on the board at 10, or do you try to trade down?
I want to see how he works out. And obviously the Giants are going to interview him. And, you know, you want to see how he interviews. He came from a very talented program at Ohio State that had some great offensive linemen. They're going to have a couple of first-round picks on the offensive line. I think he's got to be a consideration. I think Ezekiel Elliott's the only running back that's going to be selected in the first round. You know, it's a consideration. If they can trade down and get some extra picks to get some defensive linemen, some outside linebackers later on, I think that's all. You know, you take the best player available, but if the best player available is so far off your need, then you kind of look to maybe trade down and get to extra selections.
What do you think of that second group of linebackers after Miles Jack? And I realize if he's healthy, Jalen Smith's in the first group, but with the ACL, he's going to get pushed back a little bit.
Right.
Him, Raglan, the Jaron Lee kid from Ohio State that people think can run sideline to sideline, the weak side in a 4-3. Where do you think that next group of linebackers is going to start knocking off the board there on draft day?
I am a huge Jaron Lee fan, and I think after Saturday, when he works out, Jaron Lee is going to jump into the top 15 of the draft because of what you said.
Wow.
He's a three-down linebacker. If you watch the Ohio State film, he was the most consistent defender on the film. It wasn't Joey Bosa. He was a guy who defended the run, rushed the passer, can drop back off the line and play in space, cover the tight ends, cover running backs down the field. He is the ultimate three-down defender. He's a terrific 4-3 outside linebacker. I have a feeling that's the guy who's going to make the big move up the boards. Jalen Smith, if you select Jalen Smith, it has to be with the mind thought with the thought process that you're not going to get anything out of him in 2016. You may have to redshirt him in 2016. You may want to redshirt him in 2016 because it was a late injury. He injured his knee on January 1st. So if you rush him back, you may ruin him. If you take your time with him, you could have an all-pro linebacker down the road. Reggie Raglan, very good, but he's 6'1.5". I mean, he's more of an inside 3-4 type of run-stuffing linebacker who's going to struggle and have mismatch problems in coverage. So I think he's a middle of first-round pick, but I think he's a scheme-specific player where a guy like Jaron Lee can play in a 3-4, he can play in a 4-3. He's a three-down linebacker. You can shift him on the inside in certain downs. You play him on the outside. I just like his versatility.
With Smith, what is it going to come down to? Obviously, I'm sure – you know, you've got the top-notch medical here. I know players, like, spend an entire day in the MRI room. But health, interviews, what realistically will he be able to do on his pro day, if anything? Like how is that evaluation process for Smith going to?
It's going to come down to what the medical staff say. And what the Giants medical staff say may be completely different to, say, what the Miami Dolphins medical staff say, because they will look at it differently. One team may say, well, forget about this guy, not only because he's injured now, but it could be a degenerative type of condition that's really never going to heal. Where another team may say, you know what, we like this guy, we think he'll be ready by November. It's all a matter of the doctors reading the MRIs, you know, they tug on the joints and things like that. the prognosis, and no two prognoses are usually the same when it comes to combine medicals.
I want to touch, Tony, with you a couple of things we haven't really talked to anybody else yet about at this draft. Tight end class. Yeah. We haven't talked to anybody about the tight end class yet. We've heard maybe Hunter Henry back into the first round. Do you think that's true? Who else do you like? Where do you think a good value could be if you want to try to draft a tight end?
Yeah, Hunter Henry or Austin Hooper of Stanford is a guy who I think is going to make a big move up draft boards. Maybe late in round one, because what happens in late in round one is two things. Either one, those teams who are competing are trying to get that last piece in there, and so they draft for need. Or you get a team in the early part of round two who wants to jump up to get that player. So I think both of those guys, anywhere between picks 25 to number 40. Nick Vinette out of Ohio State, he's a player I know the Giants like. He's a three-down tight end. He's not a field stretcher the way Austin Hooper or Hunter Henry is. He's a guy who 10, 15 yards down the road, down the field can make the difficult catch in traffic for the first down or in the end zone, and he's also a very good blocker.
Maybe like an Anthony Fasano type of guy. We could do a little bit of everything.
Exactly. He's a better blocker than Fasano.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. And he's a guy who I know the Giants like. He's probably going to go in that third round, maybe fourth round range, early fourth round. I think that's a guy they're going to look at. And he's a guy who I think can play the season immediately. If you're looking long-term, Jarrell Adams out of South Carolina, former basketball player, 6'5 and change, incredibly athletic, had a good Senior Bowl, is just learning to block. But if you take a Jarrell Adams, you're looking at a guy maybe 2 or 3 years down the road.
What is draft day or draft night, really, the first two rounds? What is it like for you? I'm assuming you're going to be doing some work, television and radio and whatnot. But as the draft is continuing, I'm sure you have your by that time it'll be like
he's praying his mock draft is right.
Right, your mock draft 7.0. But because I love it, I have so much fun watching and try to anticipate what's happening. Do you do the same thing? Are you like, all right, so this player's gone. I think this team is really. I can't believe this guy's still available. I mean, how is that night for you?
I don't do too many mock drafts because you spend all this time on him. Then one thing happens, there's a trade or something,
and
or
then
a
free agent.
Exactly.
Right.
So, but the thing about draft night is you got all this information coming in, and you're trying to decipher which is right and which is wrong. Is this player moving up the board? Does this team really want this quarterback? Where is Jalen Smith? What information that you're getting on Jalen Smith is absolutely correct? So you're trying to process all the information you're getting, and you're trying to see which of it is more right than the other stuff so you can tell where the players are going to end up.
We talked to Matt Miller, as Anita mentioned, and he says he really likes the safety class. And he thinks he's not going to get a top 15 guy in there, obviously. Right. But once you get to the end of the first round, second round, there are some guys that can step in and do a little bit of everything. Do you agree?
It's top heavy. You only got about three or four guys. There's not a lot of depth. Canoe Neal of Florida is a guy who's moving up draft boards, could end up in the late first round. Everyone talks about Vernon Hargraves in the Florida secondary. Canoe Neal was the most consistent player when you talk to scouts. He's a good run defender.
Interesting.
He's a guy who can also – he's not as flashy as Vernon Hargraves, but he's more consistent. He doesn't have the mental breakdowns. The other guy is Darian Thompson of Boise State. I don't know he's going to go late first round, but in that early second round area, I think that's a good place for him. Again, a complete player, not a guy who plays in the box, who just plays downhill, can go sideline to sideline, can get outside the numbers to the flanks to help out the cornerbacks, makes plays against the run as well as the pass. Both good players, both guys who I think will eventually become starters as rookies in the NFL.
Great stuff.
Great stuff, Tony. One more for me. We actually didn't get you I'm not going to ask for a prediction. But
why?
Value for
let's,
the – okay, yeah, fine. Give me a prediction.
You've asked
okay.
for
whatever.
Prediction from everybody. Why are we leaving him out?
10th pick. What do you think?
I'm going to go off the beaten path here, and I'm going to say Darren Lee for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
Everybody's DeForest, but no, I'm going to say Darren Lee. Number one, I think he's going to be a riser. Number two, I don't think there's going to be a defensive end there for the Giants in round one. I think maybe round two, two or three, Bronson Kafusi of BYU, a player like that, Shalik Calhoun of Michigan State. But I think, the Giants need linebackers. They need three down defenders. They need guys who can play the pass and stuff the run and also blitz. Darren Lee can do it all. Everybody gets transfixed when they talk about Ohio State. They mention Joey Bosa. But again, you go back to the tape. He's the most consistent defender there. He's got great upside. So he's a guy who, will contribute as a rookie 2 or 3 years down the road. He's going to be a terrific player.
I'm happy you brought it up because I haven't asked anybody about pass rushers in rounds two or three. You mentioned a couple guys. Sure. Give me a feel for them and some other guys you think might be good value day two that could rush the passer a little bit.
Look at the Giants. Historically, they like the long, tall defensive ends. Bronson Kafusi of BYU, 6'6 and change. as a junior, they stood him up over tackles out of place. When he came out of a three-point stance this year, he was dynamite. Terrific. Can rush the edge. He's an older guy, more mature guy. He's going to run in the 4.7s from what I hear when he works out on
Sunday.
That's
good for a defensive end.
Exactly. And he's got a body that can add bulk. You talk to him. He's an intelligent guy. He's got a decent body of work. I think he is a second, third-round guy, as is Shalique Calhoun, someone who a lot of people thought was going to be a first-round pick coming in, 6'4 and chains. Great up the field. Not the greatest athlete, but a guy who knows how to rush the passer, plays with leverage, uses his hands well, can bend off the edge, has made a lot of plays since his sophomore year behind the line of scrimmage at Michigan State. So I think those are two guys when you get in that second, even third round, if they're on the board, the Giants haven't taken a defensive end, they have to be considerations.
Same deal, second, third round wide receivers.
Oh, I think if you want a field stretcher, Corey Coleman is a guy who I think is probably going to fall out of the first round. He's not as polished. You come out of that Baylor system, it's wide open.
I think he's only run three routes, right, in his career?
You don't have to run a lot of disciplined routes. So I think he's a guy who's used to catching the ball down the field. Later on, you caught me here, a bigger receiver. Let me think. LSU's got no last day guy would be DeMarcus Robinson of Florida. DeMarcus Robinson is a tremendous athlete. He's going to work out like an Olympian. He's got a lot of off-the-field issues. If you can get past those off-the-field issues, you could have a number one wideout on your hand.
Last question from me to you. Who is the best player coming out of this draft?
Oh, that's a good question.
It is. If it wasn't for the knee injury, it would be Jalen Smith. I mean, without
you're
a doubt.
The second guy that said that today, by the way.
No doubt about it. Because his versatility, his explosion, his game-breaking, the ability to impact the game and really a player that offenses have to game plan around. I'm going to stick with Joey Bosa. I mean, I like Joey Bosa. He's a guy who, again, can rush the passer, can play the run, a guy who teams had to game plan around, constantly doubled, yet consistently made plays. A lot of people think he's arrogant. A lot of people don't like his attitude. He's a guy.
Did you sit in on his press conference?
No, but I heard about it. I was watching it.
He's hilarious.
I had heard about it. I was at the offensive line workout. I think that, you know, the board shouldn't move that much. I mean, Joey Bosa has consistently, and Jalen Smith have consistently been the best players on the boards. Unless Joey Bosa throws up some sort of goose eggs during his workouts, as far as I'm concerned, he's going to be the best player.
I hear Jalen Ramsey might break some records this weekend.
Could be. I mean, he's a great athlete. He's not a great cornerback at this point.
You like him as a safety?
I think he can play cornerback, but I think he's going to struggle making plays with his back against the ball. You may have to use him in bump and run. You may have to use him in zone. If you put him in a lot of man coverage, there may be a lot of pass receptions thrown against him down the field, only because he can't get his head back around. Doesn't get his head back around and position himself to make plays.
He doesn't watch the ball.
He can run down the field with receivers, but he can't find the ball. So I think he's a little system limited there. Have him face the action either at safety or cornerback.
Tony. Phenomenal.
Great stuff.
And we'll talk to you down the road. Tony Pauline, Draft Insider, SNY, Eagle stuff as well. We'll be back to wrap things up from the Combine in Indianapolis right after this.
Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network. Where you're from is always part of you. The next step will test your strength, endurance, and determination. Where you'll go, that part's up to you. The Scouting Combine. And the only place to follow all the coverage is NFL Network and NFL.com. Welcome to your future. The Scouting Combine. Friday through Monday. Only on NFL Network.
And we are back here on Big Blue Kickoff Live from the Combine in Indianapolis. John Schmelk, Anita Marks. And don't forget, folks, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Anita, we got about 3 or 4 minutes here. Let's wrap up the week. Obviously, we don't have a lot of workouts to talk about yet, because I don't think the running backs have taken the field. The offensive line did their work this morning. We're going to see the running backs this afternoon. Tomorrow, we're going to see quarterbacks. wide receivers and tight ends. The defense takes over on Sunday with the linebackers and defensive linemen. Then, of course, the safeties and corners, all the DBs, coming your way on Monday. And the good thing about this week, it's almost like a preview for the draft, because things are going to change with the combine. Things are going to change for the pro days. But what the guys told us about this week is what they saw on film from these guys in college. And that, in the end, is going to usually trump anything you see here or in the next few months before the draft.
Absolutely. And I think really the big thing that teams can walk away from here, being here in Indy, is the interviews. We had Jenny Vrintas on not too long ago, and she had the privilege really to sit in on the Miami Dolphins interviews with one of their players last night. I think in talking to a number of the coaches and the scouts, it's the one big thing. You know, they've been watching these guys all season long. They know what these guys can do on the football field, but to really have the ability to sit down and talk to them, and whether it's with a psychologist or ask certain questions, especially a lot of these guys like Noah Spence. We've been talking about him. A few people feel that that would be a great pick for the Giants at 10. I'm sure that's a guy that Jerry and these, they want to sit down and really talk to because of all the field, off the field issues. So I think that's really the key here, is the opportunity to meet these guys face to face, even though it's only 15 minutes. It goes by quickly. That's what Jenny French has told us. But nonetheless, getting that opportunity to sit down and meet these young men.
And I think the other interesting thing about this week that we can kind of take, and I think this is a great education moment for fans and, you know, people like that. We talked to a lot of people here. We talked to a dozen different people that followed this draft over the last 3 days. And there is consensus to some places. You know, we know that Jalen Ramsey is really good. Miles Jack is really good. We know Jalen Smith would be really good if he wasn't hurt. But as much as there is consensus on a lot of guys, there's also disagreement on a lot of guys. Some people really like DeForest Buckner for a fit for the Giants. Two other guys said, you know what, no, I think he's more of a 3-4 guy. You have some people that really love some of the pass rushers attempt for the Giants. Some don't. And I think it lends to the truth that this is not a science. It's an art. And as Field Yates put it, you're really evaluating and choosing guys based on traits, and how those traits at one level can translate to another. And there's no way to know for sure until you actually get them in the uniform and out there on Sunday. You can think, you can speculate, but you don't know until you see it. And that's why I think this process is so challenging and also fun for us, because there are different opinions out there, and they're all educated opinions. They're all worthwhile to listen to, but eventually the one person's going to be right.
That's true. And also, you know, if there's one person's opinion that we'd love to have on the show, it's Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo.
Right.
But, of course, you know, they want to keep things, you know, close to the vest. They don't want to show their hand. Because,
and they shouldn't.
Because come that Thursday night, it's going to be a party. It's going to be fun. And one of the big things I'm walking away from this show today is, and I apologize, I forgot who was it, Miller? Was it Matt Miller who thinks that three quarterbacks are going to
yes.
go in the top 10? That is, if that materializes, that is huge. That is huge for the Giants, because that means that more, you know, the defense of the top defensive players very well, one of those guys that maybe you did not anticipate to be available at 10 could fall. To me, that's big news today, if, of course, that's how it pans out.
And I'll advise fans the same way I advised them last year and Paul Dottino last year. Don't try to fixate on one guy. Because
did
there
Paul
are so
fixate?
Many.
Who did Paul fixate?
The Iowa kid?
Oh.
Come on.
That's right.
Don't fixate on one guy.
Man
there
crush.
Are so many great players out there, and whoever the Giants pick at 10
yeah, but Paul,
will have the chance to be an excellent
But Paul's player. Very passionate, and Paul,
oh, yes,
and you know, and he gets his mind. Like for example, when Odell Beckham Jr. came out, he wanted Zach Martin.
That's correct. And,
right?
You know, and sometimes.
Who's, by the way, Zach Martin's brother.
He's coming out.
He's in this draft.
And there's, you know, sometimes you want a player, but other teams are picking before the Giants, and you can't control sometimes what they do. So it'll be wait and see. You rank your players 1 through 10. You hope you'll get one of them, and you hope it's one of the guys ranked towards the higher part of your board. Anita, excellent job this
week.
Yeah,
man. It's been great.
Excellent job.
I'm hoping, like, you know, the Giants players who've been watching the past 3 days, I mean, I don't know about you. I feel so much more in the know, so much more knowledgeable as we get closer to draft day as well as free agency. And hopefully Giants players who tuned in, they got the wealth of information as well.
I hope you guys had a good time. I know we had a lot of fun doing it. Big Blue Kickoff Live, our final show from the Combine in Indianapolis. We'll be back with you in the comfy confines of the Quest Diagnostic Training Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy watching the Combine. And we'll see you on Monday. Have a great one, everybody.
This is only the start. You guys have great futures ahead of you.
this kid had the ability to open his hips and go get it.
Kick behind the line and drop.
Bang.
The pass is intercepted by Landon Collins.
This kid is so powerful.
What a play by Devon Kennard.
We'll see how exceptional a wide receiver this kid is.
I thought it was a jump ball. Odell Beckham Jr. made the catch with one hand for the touchdown.